Most of the rest. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Brandon Newman. He's on the Aging and Older Adult Services Committee. We're going to find out how this state budget is going to affect older Pennsylvanians, what kind of things he's heard from constituents. And, you know, where this is going to take us, I think it's important to point out the fact that this budget is going to be put forth off the backs of those who can afford it the least. These cuts that they called heroic and tough choices, who are they harming? Who are these tough choices? Whose skin did it come off of? I'm saying again, it's the elderly, it's the disabled, it's the children, it's future generations. Not tough choices, in my opinion. From the Republican standpoint, that was pretty easy pickings. And it was pretty much what we said right from the beginning, no surprises. But it'll be interesting to see what Representative Newman has to say, what his constituents are telling him, because this is going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be devastating to watch, but it's something that we're going to keep an eye on and we're going to keep talking about because I think it's important that we hold those accountable. You know, last night we talked to State Representative Morabito and he's like, you know, well, you know, we need to be more centrist, need blah, 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 more together, blah, blah, blah. At the end of it, you know, it's about who did this. It's about holding those accountable who put this through. And you can say, well, you know, the other side, they're not bad people. Well, you know, good people do bad things. And, you know, that may be a value judgment. And yes, I do think balancing your budget off the backs of those who can least afford it, that is a value judgment. I believe that it showed, this budget showed the morality of the Republican Party. Also, in the second hour, we're going to talk with Zed Jelani from Think Progress about education. You know, we're seeing all of this discussion of cheating. We're seeing all of this discussion of privatization. The Independence Tea Party down near Philly, the Tea Twizzlers down there, they came out and admitted it. We want to do away with all public education. We want everything to be private. The government shouldn't do anything. We want it all private. Very proud of that. So it'll be interesting to talk about that with Zed. And in the third hour, Donald Cohen, director of the Cry Wolf Project, is going to be here talking about the same arguments that we heard during the Depression when Roosevelt was pushing through the New Deal, pretty much exactly what we're hearing today. In fact, you know, verbatim quotes coming out of two different mouths in two different eras, but the same point of view, the same language, and, you know, the same smear and scare. But that's what they're good at. Interesting tweet came over the wires today, over the tubes. Stephen Greenhouse, the labor reporter over at the New York Times, observed, quote, "It's interesting how Republicans have expunged the words rich and wealthy from their vocabulary. They instead call them job creators." And again, you know, you stop and you think about it, how subtle that happened. You don't hear the Republicans talking about the wealthy. You don't hear them talking about the rich. And when they do use wealthy or rich, they use it in a derogatory point towards Democrats. Well, they hate the wealthy and the rich, but we love the job creators. You know, it's really a very subtle thing, and it really caught my attention today. So one of the big stories that I don't think got much attention today in the news pointed out that our trade deficit in May hit the largest point in more than 2 years. Well, you know, like Congress and the president seem preoccupied with the debt fight to be all that concerned. The media is simply trying to lull us back to sleep. One of my favorite headlines on the trade deficit came out of the Financial Times, which read, U.S. trade gap widens, meaning unclear. Meaning unclear? What's unclear that we have a massive $50 billion trade deficit in 1 month, in the month of May? What's unclear about that? Personally, I think the meaning is pretty clear. We're buying more stuff from out of the country than we're producing. We're bringing in more stuff than we're sending out. That seems pretty simple to me. And the media is out there trying to spin it as, well, you know, it's just our dependence on foreign oil. And the reality is to a degree, that's true, but we also have a structural problem. And that's our trade policy with China. Not to mention, we've got a global trade model designed on supplying the U.S. with an infinite amount of cheap plastic crap that we can buy at Walmart, a bunch of cheap goods for American consumers to gobble up with their credit cards. And we've got a $25 billion trade gap with the Chinese. That's just in May. But I don't hear any of the folks in Washington talking about how we close that. All I keep hearing them talk about is how can we squeeze government workers? How can we squeeze social safety net programs? How can we squeeze the poor? How can we squeeze children? How can we squeeze everything that benefits the middle class? And if you look at these trade policies, who are our trade policies benefiting? The wildly wealthy global citizens. The people who can hop in their jets and go to France, you know, down the French Riviera for lunch, over to Dubai for dinner, and back home by, you know, by morning. Those are the people that these trade agreements pander to, the financiers. The people who want to be able to move their money around like it's a game board. And, oh, gee, we don't like this country now. We're pulling all of our money out. We're going to go over here because there's labor cheaper. Their environmental standards cheaper. We can make a bunch of money over there. Oh, we're going to move it somewhere else. Now, you got the pro-globalization crowd. They're out there trying to spin our massive trade deficit. And you got to love the Business Insider. Their headline read, "Learn to love that huge trade deficit." And they write, earlier, economists were surprised when the May trade deficit came in at $50 billion, well ahead of the $44.1 billion that was expected, because the trade deficit gets subtracted from GDP. This was seen as a cause for worry. But not now. No, don't worry. We don't worry now. Because they're saying the high trade deficit was caused by robust domestic demand. And where there is robust domestic demand, there is economic activity. And they have a nice graph that shows it out. They say history bears this out. You know, even though our trade deficit is subtracted from GDP, high trade deficit is strongly associated with a strong GDP. So if I'm getting this right, learn to love that huge trade deficit because it means our economy is getting stronger. Does that make any sense to you? The fact that someone else is producing goods, shipping it in here, profiting from the production, the value added of that product. And all we're doing is consuming and throwing away. And most of the time we're consuming on credit. Does that make any sense? And if you really stop and think about that whole idea, the problem with it is it shows a complete lack of understanding of the dollar and what our trade deficit is doing to this country. Or there's the other side of this, and there's the really jaded side of this, the one that says that they completely understand what they're saying, and they're in the process of bringing the nation to its knees. You choose. Personally, I'd like to go with they really don't know what they're talking about, because I sure hope that the idea is not that we're going to destroy the nation and bring it to its knees. I hope that's not it. Could be, though. But what is becoming clear is the rest of the world's looking at us. We're not passing the debt ceiling. The rest of the world's looking at us going, you're supposed to be the world leader. You can't get your act together. And they're looking for ways every time you turn around to dump us. And to be honest, dumping the dollar as the world's currency might actually be good for us. But understand what the Republicans are doing. It's going to lead us into a deep hole. We'll see more unemployment. We'll see more austerity. And that's what they want. They like the idea of contraction. They want less spending. They want more unemployed. And as you look at the ideas going down the road, as we're cutting government jobs, as we're cutting government spending, what it's meant to do is slow the economy down. That's the idea there. And they want to take us back to the good old days of the gold standard, which, honestly and truthfully, not going to work. They romanticize it to the point where, oh, you know, when things were so much better then. The things that were different is we had a trade policy that made sense. We were actually producing things, adding value to them, and then reaping the rewards. Now what we're doing is we're shipping out raw material to low-wage countries who they are adding value to it, and they're shipping it back to us to purchase, and workers in neither country are seeing the gains from that value added. And you got people like Rand Paul who are saying, well, we need to go back to the gold standard. And understand, if we go back to the gold standard, one, there's not enough gold in Fort Knox to go back to. We would ship all of our gold overseas because the majority of the countries, especially the Asian countries who lived through the lost decade, have massive surpluses of dollars that they're sitting on, so they never have to borrow from the IMF again. But if we were to go back to the gold standard where the Rand Pauls of the world want to take us, we would end up shipping all of our gold, because understand what happens. And maybe using the gold standard is not a bad idea. Because when we buy stuff from other countries, and this is an important fact, when you buy something from someone else, you got to pay for it. And that money leaves the country. Maybe if we had to ship gold for all the cheap plastic crap we buy from China, maybe we would then say, hey, there's no gold circulating our economy, we got a problem. Which is why, again, I'm not adverse to dumping the dollar as the reserve currency of the globe. Because what it's done is it's taken all those dollars and stuff that we're buying from everybody else, and they bring those dollars back here and they're buying us. So when you see a graph like they talked about, well, you know, high deficits and high GDP mean activity. Whose activity? Does it mean that we're getting wealthier? Or does it mean that the people who we're sending our dollars to in exchange for that cheap plastic crap from China are buying us? That's what it's about. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Brandon Newman about this budget thing. Stick around. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As President Obama was talking Monday about cuts to Medicare and Social Security being on the table in the federal debt ceiling negotiations with Republican House leadership, the AFL-CIO, Change to Win, Demos, and the Economic Policy Institute hosted a jobs forum. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined Center for American Progress senior economist Heather Boucher, Senate Ways and Means Committee Democrat ranking member Sandra Levin, and others, to draw a sharp contrast between what's really needed to create jobs and the austerity budget cutting that's dominating both political parties in Washington. Boucher says more and more economists are concluding that the economy is faltering from lack of demand. So she says rather than doing austerity cuts, government should invest in infrastructure aid to the states, education, and long-term unemployment benefits to create and help sustain the economic demand that creates jobs. Primary elections are being held today in the Wisconsin State Senate recall elections. Republicans put up fake Democratic candidates to run against real Democrats in these primaries to buy more time for the Republican recall targets. Six Republican Wisconsin State Senators will face recall elections August 9th. They're being recalled for voting to destroy public worker collective bargaining. Goodyear workers in Tennessee get a rude surprise. Jesse Russell reports.
Employees at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company's Union City, Tennessee plant arrived to work on Sunday and Monday to receive unexpected news. The company had shut down production and was moving ahead with a full closure earlier than anticipated. In February, Goodyear said it would be shuttering the plant by the end of the year, but moved up that timeline due to the ability to fulfill orders through production at other facilities. The employees will be paid for 60 days of work due to the federal WARN Act. The closure impacts nearly 1,800 employees.
The California Supreme Court ruled at the end of June that non-resident employees of California-based employers are subject to the state's overtime laws. Under the court's opinion, if an employee isn't a resident of the state but during the year works in California for full days or weeks, they must receive overtime. The lawsuit was brought by three instructors for Oracle Corporation who travel the country educating customers on how to use Oracle products. The instructors live in Colorado and Arizona, but on occasion would work in California. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hazes. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So yesterday, after Representative Lee Terry, Republican from Nebraska, went to the House floor to passionately ask the question, what caused the record flooding of the Missouri River this year? And then he went on to attack the Army Corps of Engineers for not being better prepared. The House Republicans went on to vote 218 to 191 with two Democrats jumping over in favor of Republican Representative Rob Woodall's bill that would cut $5 million from climate change planning for the Army Corps of Engineers and Water Appropriation Act. And you wonder why. And I bring this back to the state because here we're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff. People, well, gee, why are senior citizens having these problems? Why are the disabled having these problems? Why aren't children learning? It goes back to the budget that was just passed. And that's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Brandon Newman to come out and talk to us a little bit about this budget and the effects that it's going to have on folks here in our state. Representative, thanks for taking time for us.
All right. Thanks for having me, Rick. I really appreciate it.
You know, you're on the Aging and Adult Services Committee. What kind of things are you hearing from your constituents right now on this budget? Because the old folks in our community, the students, the poor, they're the ones who took it on the chin under this budget.
Well, you know, we're here. It's kind of silent right now, being July, but we are anticipating that as soon as people's property taxes go up, there's going to be less money on a fixed income, and seniors are going to be hit the most when it comes to property taxes.
You know, I look at this, and I've asked a number of Democrats over in the House and in the Senate, you know, how much input did you have in this budget? Because I'm taking the position, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is the Republicans' baby. So next election time, we know who to blame.
Well, being a freshman legislator, I didn't expect to have too much input, but I expected to at least be updated on a regular basis, and I didn't even see that. We just ran by rumors, and in the end, the budget was given to us the day before, a couple days before it was voted on.
And if I remember right, they had a printer snafu, so couldn't get the budgets out, you know, to have people read because the printer was down. Is that right?
Yes. Printing takes a long process, and if you mess one thing up on a line item, you have to reprint everything, and that just delays the process from us seeing the budget and us being able to develop our arguments as to why this budget is not right for Pennsylvanians.
Yeah, how convenient was that?
It was. It definitely hindered a lot of our arguments.
So let me ask you this, you know, in looking at this this budget, you know, I really do believe that this shows values. I believe it shows the Republican Party's morality, the folks that they went after. I'm not buying into the mainstream media frame that these were tough choices. I said this budget was going to look exactly as it did back in January, and they didn't disappoint. They went after people that weren't going to vote for them anyway and were easy to beat up with. That's my take. Your thoughts?
Well, it's disheartening for me to come in and, you know, I'm a product of public education and I'm a firm believer in a good public education, especially early childhood education, which the governor even campaigned on how important that was. And it was disheartening to, at a conservative look, we could have spent some of the surplus and still had what they were calling enough to cover maybe any type of deficit or any type of tax breaks that they were giving out next year. We could have spent some of that and lessened the burden on the property tax, the property owners, lessened the burden on families, especially older Pennsylvanians where their property taxes are going to go up. And it was disheartening to leave a lot of that money on the table when it's not our money. It is Pennsylvanians' money. It's the taxpayers' money, and they wanted it back, at least a portion of it, to basic. Everybody knows there needed to be cuts. But whenever they were so drastic in one area, which is education, which is going to trickle down and it's going to affect a lot of other areas, we could have given some of that back to the taxpayers.
You know what I find interesting, and I know this is your first term. What I find interesting, a couple of years ago, before the Bush collapse in 2008, the Republicans in this state were talking about the rainy day fund being the taxpayers' dollars, and they just wanted to hand it back. They wanted to do what Bush had done and write out checks and divvy out money back then. And Democrats said, no, we should have a rainy day fund for if something happens. And these were reasonable times. We weren't in the middle of the worst economic crisis in our lifetimes. We were in pretty reasonable times then. And now what you have is you have the Republicans looking at that pot of money going, no, we need to save that. We don't want to give it back. We don't want to fund education. We don't want to fund programs for the disabled. It's just kind of interesting how they have kind of flipped on that and no one's held them accountable for it.
Well, it's also very interesting that from my account, no money was actually put into the rainy day fund. That money, that extra money that, because of, being very fortunate in Pennsylvania, we had an increase in what expected revenues. We don't know where that money is. It's just out there right now, and it's not in a definable account, such as the rainy day fund, which that's what it was set up for. So it's kind of in the air on what exactly that money is going to be used for.
You know, I look at this budget and there was so much that was left on the table. The fact that we didn't tax the drillers, which, you know, we're already paying the tax. We're just not benefiting from it. It's in their business plan. We know it. They're already charging it for it. We're just not getting a portion of it. We left the Delaware loophole open. We left a lot of revenue on the table. Yet again, what we're doing to public education, in my opinion, is exactly what we have done to infrastructure in this country the last 30 years. Continue to starve it so that it's crumbling. And that's my fear, that education down the road We're going to allow it to crumble, and we won't have the great education system that we have.
And yes, you know, both my grandfathers worked in the mills, and my mother and my father were teachers, and I've been able to further myself as now I'm an attorney to be able to get an education because of my foundation was so great. And my foundation goes all the way back to my elementary school. And so coming in as a freshman and coming in kind of naive to the system and seeing the whole approach and how they are, or how this budget really gets at the heart of what my foundation is, it was very hard to swallow.
Man, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pennsylvania State Representative Brandon Newman. Brandon, you know, I'm looking at your bio. You're a young guy. You're an attorney, you went through college, all this stuff. I can't imagine what your student loan debt must be, what your situation is, and then having to look at this governor saying, we need to cut 56% from higher education. We need to close that door on people like you.
I do have student loans, going to, undergrad, and then I got my master's and my law degree. I don't know if anybody can really afford that today, but now it's even going to be more unattainable. And also with the credit crunch, it's harder to get student loans than whenever I was in school. And I'm fortunate that, you know, I'm able to pay my bills and, be able to pay for what I believe was a great investment in my education. But some people aren't even going to be able to have that chance because of the credit crunch and increase in tuition, and not only increase in tuition, but also cutting out grants that students really need to be able to either secure credit or go to college.
You know, I have a friend, and she's a number of years older than I am. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, she went through college, went to the University of Michigan, undergrad, master's, law degree, just like you said. She did that all on a minimum wage waitress job, did not take out a student loan, did not have student loan debt. Those were much different times. And I'm asking the question is, if we believe in education, we believe in the future of this country, what did they do back in the 60s and 70s that they aren't doing now? And that's federal and state government funding opportunity for students moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing that we're really harping out here in Western Pennsylvania is we are firm, firm believers in secondary education. But that doesn't necessarily mean college. That means further yourself in the trades. It means further yourself in what you want to be successful in. And, you know, culinary schools, and if you want to be a welder, construction, if you want to do these are careers. They're not just jobs. And we really want people to focus in on what they want to do and not necessarily go to four-year school, but go to what fits their lifestyle.
Excellent point. You know what bothers me is we're bringing in all these drillers are coming into the state from all around the country. They're bringing their workforce with them. And I'm saying that we've already got workers here that are qualified to do those jobs. Why is it that we're allowing it to happen on the state level? We could easily pass some legislation giving incentives. We could pass some legislation to make sure that those jobs are filled by Pennsylvanians. It's one of those opportunities that comes around as they're saying with the drilling, and I'm not a fan of the drilling. But it's here to stay. We should, you know, take advantage of it while we can. But again, these should be done by Pennsylvanians, and we should be giving those people the skills that they need and not making them go into a generation of debt just to get a job.
Yes, I agree. And it's most important that we take care of Pennsylvanians first. And, you know, structured within many laws, there's requirements and incentives for hiring Pennsylvanians. And, you know, the companies have embraced that they are going to be taxed or a fee, and you can build an incentive into that tax or fee. You know, if you hire a Pennsylvanian, you're hiring somebody that's paying property taxes, you're hiring somebody that's shopping in this area, living here, being productive in our community. You know, there's an argument that the gas companies, if they're hiring Pennsylvanians, should get some sort of incentive. We shouldn't have to do that, but if that's what it takes to get Pennsylvanians hired, than we can.
You know, and talking about the shale drilling, I got to be honest, I want Pennsylvanians who are living in that neighborhood doing those jobs, and there's a reason for it. You know, we see transient labor coming across in the building trades in other states across the country who don't have strong laws to help encourage local construction work, and they do shoddy work, and they're gone before you know it's shoddy work. What concerns me in these drilling fields is if you got somebody who's from, you know, halfway across the country, they don't care if something spills on the ground. They don't care what happens if you have an explosion or you have you know, some type of an environmental disaster. They're going home. It doesn't matter to them. But someone who lives in the neighborhood, whose kids are going to play next door to that thing, they've got a vested interest in it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're very fortunate in Western Pennsylvania to have great qualified laborers and workers. And they are seeing increases in work, and we just need to keep pressuring companies to continue to use Pennsylvanian workers. And, you know, we're hopeful companies like Range Resources are rotating Pennsylvanians in to get them actually on the rig, so that in the end, you know, it is going to be all Pennsylvanians is our hope.
That is the hope. Last couple of questions I got for you, Representative Newman. You know, you look at the fall when you guys come back into session. I am seeing, and maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm seeing the attacks come fast and furious. It's going to be privatized the liquor stores. It's going to be privatized the school system. It's going to be put up some weird, bizarre shale tax so we can appease people. That's not really going to add any benefit to the taxpayers of this state. Right to work legislation, a whole bunch of threshold bills, a whole bunch of attacks on the middle class and working people. And I guess my question is, where do we start to fight the back of these attacks?
Well, there is some promise in that we were able to get at least a compromised unemployment compensation bill. So we're hopeful that there's enough common sense legislators that understand labor and that understand our workforce in Pennsylvania that we can put some either fight off nonsensical legislation or put legislation in place that makes sense for Pennsylvania workers. So it's going to be a battle. There's going to be a push for legislation because, you know, this is basically the last session before the next primary, the last part of the session before the next primary. So they have to do something to get to their base so that they don't have primary opponents and they're able to be successful in the primaries next year.
And as I've been saying, this budget is going to, I believe, going to be their undoing when people see what it is that they have done and the results that come out of it.
Yeah, it's going to be long term. We're going to see the start increasing in property taxes, the less people going to getting their furthering their education, getting better jobs. And it's going to be very harmful to our youth, our future. I'm a big proponent of early education. The earlier you catch a problem, the earlier you intervene, the earlier you help a child, the less you have to spend on them later.
Absolutely.
So we need to really focus on that so that we develop an independent, great youth that can succeed under any climate.
Exactly. Representative Brandon Newman, I appreciate your time. I'd love to have you back again real soon.
Thank you very much. I look forward to coming back on.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Remember the hoorahs from Republicans just 4 months ago when House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan issued the GOP's, quote, bold plan to slash federal spending? Gosh, how quickly that cheering turned to silence. That's because the budgetary jewel in Ryan's creation was the elimination of Medicare. He proposed replacing it with a privatized voucher program that would pay only a fraction of what Medicare covers. This turns out to be a spectacularly stupid idea, resulting in angry seniors showing up at one of Ryan's town hall meetings to whack him over the head with his own proposal. The bold plan suddenly had a stench worse than week-old roadkill, and Republicans are now trying to disown it. But don't mistake the GOP's sudden squeamishness for meaning that Ryan's Let's Kill Medicare effort has gone away. The big stinker is still in the Republican budget and still a core tenet of right-wing orthodoxy. Indeed, all eight of the party's presidential contenders are on record in favor, but not publicizing it. Mitt Romney says he's, quote, on the same page with Ryan. Michelle Bachmann voted for the Ryan plan and says we need to, quote, wean everybody off Medicare. Tim Pawlenty waffled, but when cornered, said that, of course, he's for killing it. John Huntsman, supposedly the moderate in the race, says, I would have voted for it. Herman Cain, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum also are enthusiastically on board. However, in a rare moment of candor, Newt Gingrich called the plan, quote, radical right-wing social engineering. But he got a public spanking by party dogmatists, and now he says he would have voted for Ryan's scheme, too. This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP intends to make an all-out assault on Medicare in the next Congress, but they don't want to campaign on it. So get in their face. The time to confront them is not after the elections, but now.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, the House of Representatives panel is threatening to subpoena the National Labor Relations Board if they don't fork over the documents in the complaint against Boeing. CNBC reported that Daryl Issa, the Republican from California, who's the head of the board there, the House Oversight and General Reform Government Reform Committee, he's saying, look, we want those documents by 5 o'clock July 26th, or we're going to subpoena you. And I'm going, you know, wait a second. Maybe I'm missing something, but this is unprecedented. This is really wielding the arm of power, the fist of power to new lengths. This is an ongoing investigation. This is an ongoing case. I'm sorry, I don't know many places where you're going to have to subpoena your evidence, your documents, so that the defense can then spin it any way they want. I'm looking at this whole NLRB thing, and look, it's the Republicans, one of their big campaign things. And I was reading a thing, I think it was the Trib Review had this guy didn't put his name to it, but it was like an opinion piece. And he wrote, any 2012 GOP presidential candidate who doesn't heed the fellow Republican Lindsey Graham's call to make a major campaign issue of the National Labor Relations Board attempt to prevent the opening of Boeing and their new $1 billion plant in his home state of South Carolina shouldn't be running for office in the first place, trying to punish Boeing for supposedly retaliating against union strikes elsewhere by locating a new plant in a right-to-work South Carolina. The Democrat-dominated NLRB threatens all companies' freedom to invest as they see fit. Talk about restraint of free commerce. He goes on to say, Republicans who don't see this as government overreach and payback politics at its worst shouldn't be leading our party, according to Lindsey Graham. And he said, I think most people are with us here. Because they've done such a good job of demonizing the NLRB. Because most people don't know what it is. It's been so long since the Labor Relations Board has actually been on the side of labor, has actually been on the side of working people, that I think a generation doesn't know what it is and doesn't know what it does. So now that they finally go, you know what, we need to enforce some laws, you've got this kind of this reaction. And this guy continues by saying it's an issue that highlights the Obama administration's servility toward big labor and fondness of ruinous government interventionism. And issue that can lure voters to the GOP that they need to win next year. And that's what this is about. He goes on to say, you know, Republican presidential hopefuls Mitt Romney, Bachman, Gingrich, and Huntsman are already using the winning talking point on the stump. Kudos to Graham for helping to make an anti-NLRB pro-Boeing stance practically a prerequisite for the GOP nomination. And he points out John Huntsman, the former Utah governor, the former U.S. ambassador to China, now a presidential hopeful. He was in South Carolina making his pitch to the voters, and I love how the article points him out. A 51-year-old Republican presidential candidate joined by his wife, Mary Kay, and several of their children, because I don't know that they know how many he's got, pointing out his pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-business platform. He drew the most applause when he talked about the NLRB, saying, quote, the NLRB is making a mockery of the free market system. And, well, what free market system? Are you really using Boeing as an example of the free market? Really? A company that couldn't possibly exist without federal government subsidies, without tax handouts, without the government buying their planes, without sweetheart trade deals? Really? Free market? You going to argue that on Boeing? To me, and I'm glad the Republicans are making an issue out of this. It's about time working people in this country get their heads out of their keisters and ask, which side are you on? Because that's what this is. Right now, we are in one of those moments in time where you have to pick a side. There's no center here. You are on the side of the multinational corporation, or you are on the side of the working people of this country. That's it. And sorry, you can't serve two masters. You can't vacillate between the two. Oh, gee, you know, maybe you have rights, but maybe not. Oh, I don't know. Not possible. Either workers in this country are going to have rights, or we're going to be serfs. Because we're not going to be slaves. That would make them feed us and take care of us. Not going to happen. They're just going to rent us for a little while, and then you're on your own. And I look at this whole argument, oh, it's the free market. This isn't the free market. This is exploitation of our labor laws. And you know, Jake, when I look at this argument, and the Republicans are really trying to whip up some fervor, because they've gotten the American people to buy into this idea that we need to be business friendly, because businesses create jobs, and we need to be pro-business and pro-job creator. And I'm going, well, wait a second, they're not creating jobs now. And we are as pro-business as we have ever been.
They are trying to make that point, but let's be honest, this all comes down to them. When I say them, I'm talking about the Republican Party and the corporate interests. They're used to getting their way. This is the one time the NLRB said to corporate America, no, you're not doing it. You just violated the law. And let's be honest, under Bush, at the most, they got their hands slapped. They're not used to that. This is a major defeat for them. In their eyes, it is a defeat.
It's not a defeat. It's an opinion right now.
It's their opinion. It's in our.
It's Leif Solomon's. Now we're going to go through the process, and it's a long, drawn out process.
But for them, it's a defeat because they're used to doing what they want to do.
Exactly. And you know, you look at this and you go, exactly. At what point did you not think, by opening your big mouth in public and talking to reporters about, hey, I'm moving because we had a strike? At what point someone wasn't going to wake up and say, well, wait a second, that's against the law. And those workers need to be made whole. And I think as a society, workers have gotten in their mind that we don't deserve to be made whole. And to me, this could be that catalyst moment where people peek their heads up, from their little cubicles and go, what? We have rights? Wow. We should use those. I mean, that's the kind of direction that I see this going. And this whole thing, they're making this as difficult as possible. And they've really, you got to give them credit. They're very good at their spin. They're making about as much freedom, and, you know, with government tyranny, telling a corporation what they can and can't do. I'm sorry. Again, going back to that little document thing that we've got in the glass case there in Washington, that everyone loves to quote, or in Herman Cain's case, misquote, we the people, people being the main word, we the people, we run this country, not corporations, we the people. So if you start from that premise, and it's my belief that we should go back to the good old days of charters, where corporations have to say what good they are to society. What are they going to do to move society forward to benefit we the people? We are not their servants. Understand that they should be our servants. Corporations should be here to serve us, not the other way around, which is what's happened. We've given them too much power. We've ceded too much to the CEO suites. We've ceded too much to Wall Street. And I'm hoping at some point that we wake up to this. And I'm hoping at some point, I'm hoping it's this next election cycle. Because you've gotten a little taste. I mean, all the bad stuff that's happened has just been the tip of the iceberg, just the little test spoon they give you at the ice cream store to see if you like it or not. That's what we've got, just a little test spoon. If we vote for these criminals in 2012, I guarantee you we're going to get, well, we're going to get everything we deserve. It is that simple. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Stick around. Beat up cars, tires, and numbers go crack, boom, bam. RFCK in the USA, RFCK in the USA, RFCK in the USA, yeah, yeah. Back in the USA.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rates so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
That's right. He's a Republican, and he wants to repatriate all of those profits from overseas. Because, you know, as Republican Policy Committee Chairman Tom Price said, if we could just repatriate that money, if we could just bring those profits right back here, we could just get that money to come back at the rate that they'd be taxed in those other countries, we would have a huge job magnet to the country. Huge job magnet. Bringing jobs back like crazy. Couldn't have enough jobs. I point to Cisco. Cisco says they're laying off 10,000 workers, 14% of its workforce. They're going to try and do some of the, you know, the we're going to get rid of the old people by offering them a carrot so that they retire. They want to try and wring about $1 billion in expenses out of their operating because they want to revive their profits. They're already a very profitable company, but you need more. You know, when there's you know, it's out there, you want to wring every penny out of it. And they're lobbying Congress to bring that money from overseas back into the U.S. They want that repatriation holiday. They want that huge corporate tax break. Now, understand, Cisco is one of those companies that the Republicans love to say that we've got the highest corporate tax rate in the world. We have 35%, highest in the world. Yet Cisco only paid just over 19%, not 35%. And they've dodged some $7 billion in taxes since 2005. So that's $7 billion that we, the taxpayers, didn't get because they somehow wiggled their way out of or lobbied their way out of paying their taxes. And now they're trying to, with this Win America, they're trying to lobby for this repatriation holiday so they could pay even less while laying off 10,000 workers. Now, what happened to the idea that, whoa, job magnet? Big job magnet. Come on, bring that money back. Job magnet. Money in the pockets. Job magnet. Not going to happen. What's going to happen to that money is, as has happened in the past, it's divvied up amongst the very, very top of the scale, and they put it in their pockets, and they pay 15% capital gains tax on it, and they're very happy to reinvest it overseas where they can say, oh, yeah, we can repatriate it later. Meanwhile, we have an unemployment problem that is going through the roof that the Republicans are using to batter the president with because, look, the stimulus wasn't big enough. It was poorly targeted. Why? Because we had Republicans who were saying, well, we need tax breaks. And that's what we did. A good portion of that stimulus bill, a good portion of the recovery money was to make sure that states didn't collapse. A good portion of that money was to make sure that families didn't collapse. And there wasn't enough to actually get the economy moving. It stopped us from falling. It shouldn't have been called the recovery or the stimulus. It should have been the cushion that softened the blow. And then we should have had a recovery bill. And I saw this interesting article in the New York Times asking the question, are jobless benefits keeping the unemployed complacent and invisible? And what's interesting is she points out this, the fact that what's happened is we now have a unemployed class who has basically been put into the margins. Like here in Pennsylvania, we don't have unemployment offices like they had in the 60s and 70s where unemployed people were centrally located and you could talk to them and organize them. No, learned that lesson. So now we just leave them in their homes and make them phone it in or put it on the computer. So they're easy to hide. And in the article, she quotes John Dodds, the director of the Philadelphia Unemployment Project, who said, quote, I've been involved with the unemployed since the mid-70s, and this is the least amount of organization we've seen. He says, in every other recession, it was a major struggle to extend unemployment benefits. This recession came on as we went into the 2008 election, and everybody was bending over backwards to help the unemployed and offer benefits. And, you know, we've continued to hand out benefits, so people haven't been enraged. And I've been calling and I've been waiting for the Coxie's Army moment, where the unemployed say, we're tired of sitting on the dole, we're tired of sitting at home, we want to go back to work, where are the jobs? Well, what's going on? That may happen at the end of this year when benefits go away. And I'm still hopeful that the unemployed who have been long-term unemployed at some point say, we need full employment policies. We need to get people back to work, Jake, building big things, building roads, building bridges, you know, fixing our neighborhoods.
What you're advocating, which we've advocated on your show numerous times, is employer or last resort. However, when you bring it up, oh, no, that's socialism. That's communism. We can't do that, not to mention the fact that it'll put us deeper in debt.
And here's the problem. The problem is for so long we have had this war on working people. We've had companies, the Walmarts of the world, who go to a business and say, when you're moving to China? Because you got to squeeze out every penny. You got to squeeze all the profit out. You got to squeeze those labor costs. You got to squeeze those benefit costs. You got to squeeze those production costs. So we can, you know, we can have the Walmart family, you know, $10 billion apiece, being the top of the Fortune 400. And, you know, you look at this and you look at this whole movement towards venture capitalists and this whole movement towards these big hedge funds and these people who are these really massive holders of wealth looking to put their money somewhere. And, you know, some of the articles that I've been reading lately, and it's like, duh, you didn't know that was going on, where these venture capitalists go to these strategy meetings of these big corporations and say, well, what's your offshoring policy? What are you going to do to break down labor costs? What are you going to do to take advantage of environmental conditions overseas? What are you going to do to make us more money? And they're actually pushing these companies overseas. So, you know, when you start saying, well, there are no jobs out there, well, why are there no jobs? Because we've got criminals on Wall Street who are taking advantage of our bizarre trade policies to push jobs overseas. You know, you look at the auto industry, and while, you know, hey, I'm happy that, you know, it's back and, you know, people are working. Granted, they're working for significantly less than they were before the collapse. Granted, they're not making the standard of living that they used to, but they still have jobs, and even if they are $14-15 an hour, they're still jobs. Maybe you can build those back up over time. But that was, part of me believes that was a planned thing. They kept moving jobs to Mexico, kept moving jobs to China, kept moving all over the globe. First it was Brazil, all to bring the wages down, to squeeze the working class, to squeeze the middle class. Also, Wall Street could make more. Because, you know, how many times have you seen a report on Wall Street where, oh, they announced, so-and-so announced layoffs and their stock prices went up? More profit. And what's interesting to me is how we have these business schools and all of these schools who emphasize, you know, we need to maximize shareholder wealth. We need to weaken those unions. We need to be, you know, preoccupied with economic, you know, with deficits over economic growth. We gotta care about this stuff. And, you know, I'm finally finishing off my master's degree. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the other students' thesis ideas. And I'm going, what has happened to the working class of this country? Now, granted, the people who are in this class are not working class folks. These are middle management people who want that degree to step forward and get higher up in the company. And they're all looking at, how do I squeeze a quarter to make the eagle scream? How do I make sure that I can squeeze every dime out of that worker, or I squeeze every inefficiency out? That's what our business schools are teaching. And how can I outsource, and how can I take advantage of opportunities abroad in Asia, and how can I use the International Chamber of Commerce to help me do that and provide the chutes to do it? That's what's gotten us into this mess. That's what's gotten us into trouble. Not somebody who's sitting on unemployment. It's these greedy folks on Wall Street who just, you know what? They want more, more, and more. It is never enough. And we are never going to feed the insatiable appetite of the Wall Street monster. Never going to happen. Which is why you have to restrain it. Which is why they are fighting so hard against Dodd-Frank. Which is why they're fighting so hard against any regulation that oversees what these criminals are doing. It's a shame. And we should be backing this. We should be saying we want more oversight. We want sunshine. But we're too busy fighting over who's going to win American Idiot. And we're too busy watching the Kardashians and all the other nonsense. They're stealing our lunch. They're eating it right in front of us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Zed Jelani. Stick around. Right back after this.
I announce the winner on the radio with my microphone. I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As President Obama was talking Monday about cuts to Medicare and Social Security being on the table in the federal debt ceiling negotiations with Republican House leadership, the AFL-CIO, Change to Win, Demos, and the Economic Policy Institute hosted a jobs forum. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined Center for American Progress senior economist Heather Boucher, Senate Ways and Means Committee Democrat ranking member Sandra Levin, and others, to draw a sharp contrast between what's really needed to create jobs and the austerity budget cutting that's dominating both political parties in Washington. Boucher says more and more economists are concluding that the economy is faltering from lack of demand. So she says rather than doing austerity cuts, government should invest in infrastructure aid to the states, education, and long-term unemployment benefits to create and help sustain the economic demand that creates jobs. Primary elections are being held today in the Wisconsin State Senate recall elections. Republicans put up fake Democratic candidates to run against real Democrats in these primaries to buy more time for the Republican recall targets. Six Republican Wisconsin State Senators will face recall elections August 9th. They're being recalled for voting to destroy public worker collective bargaining. Goodyear workers in Tennessee get a rude surprise. Jesse Russell reports.
Employees at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company's Union City, Tennessee plant arrived to work on Sunday and Monday to receive unexpected news. The company had shut down production and was moving ahead with a full closure earlier than anticipated. In February, Goodyear said it would be shuttering the plant by the end of the year, but moved up that timeline due to the ability to fulfill orders through production at other facilities. The employees will be paid for 60 days of work due to the federal WARN Act. The closure impacts nearly 1,800 employees.
The California Supreme Court ruled at the end of June that non-resident employees of California-based employers are subject to the state's overtime laws. Under the court's opinion, if an employee isn't a resident of the state but during the year works in California for full days or weeks, they must receive overtime. The lawsuit was brought by three instructors for Oracle Corporation who travel the country educating customers on how to use Oracle products. The instructors live in Colorado and Arizona, but on occasion would work in California. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, you look at the Pennsylvania state budget. You look at the budgets that they're proposing on the national level. You look across the country at the different states' budgets and, you know, all these massive cuts to education. It's going to become at some point in the near future, I think, where the only way a kid's going to be able to get an education is if they win the lottery. And, you know, they're making these vouchers out to be the great lottery. The kids are going to win these wonderful lottery tickets. But if no one validates that ticket, did they actually win anything? And I look at the latest report from USA Today. That the University of Iowa is having their MBA program students evidently put things into Twitter now. So the person with the best tweet, they're gonna win a scholarship worth $37,000. Maybe that's the direction we go. Maybe we have gimmicks to get kids into school instead of saying, you know what, as a society, all kids need to get an education. Maybe that's where we're heading. Here to talk more about it and some of the stories that he's been following and covering is Zed Jelani from the thinkprogress.org blog. Zed, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this whole education situation, and here in Pennsylvania, we had a governor who wanted to cut $1 billion from K through 12. He wanted to slash 56% of the higher education budget. And we've got, you know, colleges saying, hey, let's have a Twitter contest. Maybe that's how kids can get into college.
No, I mean, it's really ridiculous, and I'm sure your show's covered this as well, you know, the way that he's trying to get the people who are doing gas and shale in the state to not pay their taxes, too. So, I mean, really what he's doing is he's starving the public system of any funds here. And you can ask college students whether they think that college is just too affordable, or whether you can ask teachers and people or parents in their PTAs whether they think that their schools just have too much money and, you know, there's a lot of waste to cut. I mean, that's just obviously not the situation.
You know, I look at Eric Cantor, who said, well, what we should do is we should have those kids who are taking out student loans, those people who are taking out student loans, they should start having to pay their interest immediately. So those that work-study money they get, that should go right to the student loans.
You know, that's just completely ridiculous. I mean, apparently yesterday, Cantor actually brought that idea up to Obama. He said, well, you know, one thing we can do to close the deficit is to have students start paying their, you know, loans while they're still in school. I mean, I don't know how they're supposed to afford room, board, tuition, and interest. I mean, it's a silly idea. And he said it would only save $40 billion over 10 years. So, I mean, it's a tiny amount of money for the deficit and a huge amount of money for our college students. And thankfully, Obama kind of dismissed that out of hand. He literally said he didn't want to screw students. So, you know, I'm glad Obama did that.
Well, there's something to be grateful for. But, you know, when you look at this, I say that students have been screwed for the last 30 years. You know, because as I mentioned earlier, I have a friend who's probably, you know, she went to college back in the late 60s, early 70s. And she worked her way through the University of Michigan undergrad, master's, law degree on a minimum wage waitress job. Did not have any debt, didn't have any student loans, didn't have any of that stuff. She was able, with her minimum wage job, to afford an education.
You know, that's absolutely right. And what really scares me is I think that a lot of people who are young these days, you know, the average student today graduates with around $23,000 in debt. And I think a lot of people who are young today don't realize that this wasn't always the situation in America. I mean, if you went to one of the great University of California schools in, like, the 1960s and 70s, your tuition was basically free. I mean, you could graduate with zero debt. Almost no one was graduating with major debt out of college. I mean, my dad also, you know, he went to school here as an immigrant. He funded his entire education through scholarships and through, you know, working side jobs, and it was easy for him. And unfortunately now, today, a lot of that's just being wiped out. I mean, I was fortunate enough. I went to school in Georgia, and we actually have something called the Hope Scholarship, which pays your tuition if you keep your grades up. I mean, recently the Republicans have started to cut into that, so unfortunately that's being drawn down, and it shouldn't be, but, you know, I was very lucky, and most students don't have that opportunity, and I think it's really, really scary that a lot of young people are growing up now not realizing that we used to have a government that really valued this, and that said that, you know, if you're a smart person, we should help you get your education so you can be an engineer, or you can be a doctor, or you can be, you know, the sort of people that we need in this country to be a prosperous country, because, you know, when everyone is well-educated, everyone succeeds.
The people who are going to solve our problems. You know, we need some smart people, because evidently the folks who are running Washington right now, I got to start questioning what's going on. When you're turning your back on education here in this state, again, you know, you look at the massive cuts. What my fear is, education is going to be just like our infrastructure. After 30 years of starving it, it's eventually going to crumble.
No, you know, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think really the mentality of the people who really want to come back on education, they're being so selfish that they're really acting against their own self-interest, because they think, well, you know, why should I have to pay your education? But the fact of the matter is that if we don't have, you know, like a well-educated set of people who aren't weighed down by, you know, these loans and just the prohibitive high cost of education, we're not going to have a successful country. I mean, all our competitor countries, there's not a single other developed country, almost all of them, where it costs nearly as much to go to school as it does here in the United States. And that's why you have people in other countries, for example, going to med school for, you know, a fraction of the cost and not getting out of med school demanding that they have to go work at big corporate hospital chains. They can have family practice, they can work less hours, and they can still do an incredible job. And I think that's really what we need here. I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why you've seen so many people go off to Wall Street and corporate law firms after school, is because they have so much debt, and they don't want to, you know, take work to, you know, for example, defending poor people in the court. So they don't want to take work, you know, being an engineer making $70,000 a year with them going to Wall Street, you know, make, you know, five times that much and do really nothing of worth for anyone. So, you know, it's a really self-destructive problem, and it's destructive to the whole country at the end of the day. And it used to be that rich people in this country at least understood they have to give people some basic guarantee of education, because really it's good for them too in the long run.
You know, what scares me is we're going to have a brain drain in this country, and not the kind that where people leave the country, where we still have the same citizens. It's just we haven't educated them.
Yeah, and it's really a huge crisis. You know, I met a girl a few years ago. She went to Notre Dame, and then she transferred over to a school in France. And I asked her, you know, how was the quality of education? She said it was basically the same. And I asked her how much it cost her a semester. She said, like, it was a few hundred dollars. So, If you can get away with a deal that good and get the same education, I think we're doing something wrong over here.
I absolutely agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Zed Jelani from thinkprogress.org. You know, one of the stories I saw yesterday was this woman, Terry Adams. She's the head of the Independence Hall T-Twits there in Philly in New Jersey. Came out with something I thought was, you know, honest. You got to give them, on some level, they're emboldened to the point where now they can be honest. And she said, look, I want public schools to go away. We want to have privatized everything.
Yeah, and, you know, we do have to give it credit for being honest, because a lot of the people who advocate for tax credits or school vouchers, which are basically you know, bundles of taxpayer money that are given to parents and they can take them to private schools, one of the arguments they make is, well, we just want better schools. We think private schools will give good competition, blah, blah, blah. But this woman was very honest. She said, you know, the reason we want the school voucher program we're advocating for in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, is because we honestly don't like public education, and we actively do want to undermine it. And sort of interesting historical fact here is that the roots of school vouchers was actually exactly those types of people. School vouchers came about because right wingers who either had very strong like religious convictions and wanted religious schools, or racists who didn't want racial desegregation in schools. They're just people that hated the public school system or government schools. Those are the people that really started vouchers. I'm not saying that everyone who advocates for them is necessarily from those camps, but that's really where the roots of this policy idea is from, and I think that's where Terry Adams is coming from.
Yeah, and what bothers me is part of me believes that it's we don't have any manufacturing left. A lot of the industry has been forced overseas, and this is one of the last profit generators left for them to suck dry. It's a public good, and they can hold people hostage with it.
No, I mean, that's exactly true. I mean, that's exactly what the right believes, and I think that's what a lot of business people believe who are investing in education a lot now. Like, for example, the for-profit colleges or online education, a lot of these big scams, they're thinking, you know, their capital is always moving around trying to make a buck on everything, and if they can make a buck on education by privatizing education, you know, they're going to go for that too. I mean, you mentioned that Corbett has been trying to push like a $1 billion cut in education. At the same time, he's pushing a voucher scheme that costs $720 million of taxpayer money. So basically what he's doing is he's shifting taxpayer money away from public schools to private schools. So it's almost not a matter of him saving money. It really is a matter of him ideologically championing private education, which is really scary because, you know, one of the great backbones of this country has been our public school system. It has its problems, but it's really something that has lifted an enormous amount of people up and has made us really a great nation.
Well, it's something the working class fought, bled, and died for, so that their children would have an opportunity to get out of the mines and actually succeed and have a productive life.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly true, and I think it's the same across the board. I mean, that's the reason Paul Ryan put out this budget plan to try to privatize Medicare, because Medicare is an extremely successful system that takes care of people and doesn't try to make a profit off of you. Same thing with Social Security, same thing with so many of these programs. I mean, obviously, sometimes you run into problems with the public sector, and we should solve those, but trying to outright privatize it, you know, when we're doing that most of the time, that's about someone's greed and someone's profit. It isn't about, you know, serving the rest of us in this country who really enjoy these public programs that make us a great country and make us who we are.
And it's that safety net that keeps us from collapsing. If you look at the collapse of 2008, we could have fallen much harder without the elasticity programs that kept us at least off of the bottom, if you will.
No, exactly. And without the FDIC, our banking system would have been over, and I don't know where our country would be right now. So, yep. And another New Deal era relic that really saved our butts more than once.
Yeah. Did you see the article yesterday? I think it was yesterday or Sunday in the New York Times. It was called A Message from a Charter School, Thrive or Transfer, where they were talking about this woman whose kid had some problems, some, you know, behavioral problems, attention deficit disorder, and the school basically said, well, we can't handle him. You know, you should transfer him somewhere else. And that's the kind of pick or choose that I worry about.
Yeah, this is a really great sort of article, because what it did, I think, is it showed sort of a problem with a lot of the private schools and charter schools. Charter schools are basically privately managed public schools, but they can be managed by, like, for-profit corporations and so on and so forth. A lot of what they do, honestly, is they sort of skim off the top when they admit students, because they're not sort of under basic public regulation and authority. So what they'll do, for example, New Orleans has a really big problem with this, is that the charters sort of find ways to self-select with special needs students, and any sort of city that has a lot of private schools or charter schools, almost all the special needs students what we found in the public schools, because the private schools just don't think it's that profitable to be educating them, because, you know, what they, you know, they're focusing on test scores, they're focusing on some metric that they just think will weigh them down if they get special needs students. And it's really a horrible thing, because, you know, I actually, in my high school, when I was in Georgia, back in Georgia, I actually mentored a special education class, and I don't think I could have done that if I was going to a private school or maybe, you know, some of these charter schools, because they don't find those students to be profitable for their brand name a lot of the time, and they don't want to admit them, and because, you know, their entire thing is a quote-unquote accountability, and if they think they need to get their test scores to a certain limit, then they might just drop some students or try to not admit them who, you know, meet certain criteria.
Or do like some of the schools in Pennsylvania and in Georgia have done. Just erase the test and change the answers.
Yeah, and that's a whole another disaster in Atlanta. I'm glad that this investigation, and actually Governor Deal is a conservative Republican, and I don't agree with him about probably 95% of the issues, but I'm really glad that he, you know, oversaw this really great report that really showed, you know, what is a disaster can be when you can have an entire city run by these really right-wing ideas in education.
Yeah, I agree. But to me, this whole privatization scheme, it's a failed idea, and at the end, we the taxpayers are going to be the folks who get screwed the most on this. And the students get screwed the most. The taxpayers are going to be ones who are going to end up picking up the checks, and the profiteers, they're going to be very happy.
No, and that's exactly right. And I think, you know, I encourage people to really look at what's happening in their communities, because I think for a long time, the privatizers in education sort of thought there and did it pretty much unchecked. No one was really looking out to what they were doing. But I think now people are waking up with what happened in Wisconsin, and people are understanding that, you know, the things that really make us great, the things that make us a community, our public services, the things that we pay our taxes for, the things that we go to our elections to vote for, those things under attack right now. The people who are doing this are trying to destroy our sense of community. They're trying to destroy our few publics left. And really, Americans have to start waking up and seeing all these things as connected. They want to privatize your Medicare, your Social Security, your education, and if you really believe that we're a country and that we should take care of each other and that these things make us great together, you have to stand up and defend them.
Absolutely, and extremely well said. Zed, I appreciate the time, and I really appreciate the work you guys do over that Think Progress. I use your stuff quite often. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
Zed Jelani, thinkprogress.org. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remember the hoorahs from Republicans just 4 months ago when House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan issued the GOP's, quote, bold plan to slash federal spending? Gosh, how quickly that cheering turned to silence. That's because the budgetary jewel in Ryan's creation was the elimination of Medicare. He proposed replacing it with a privatized voucher program that would pay only a fraction of what Medicare covers. This turns out to be a spectacularly stupid idea, resulting in angry seniors showing up at one of Ryan's town hall meetings to whack him over the head with his own proposal. The bold plan suddenly had a stench worse than week-old roadkill, and Republicans are now trying to disown it. But don't mistake the GOP's sudden squeamishness for meaning that Ryan's Let's Kill Medicare effort has gone away. The big stinker is still in the Republican budget and still a core tenet of right-wing orthodoxy. Indeed, all 8 of the party's presidential contenders are on record in favor, but not publicizing it. Mitt Romney says he's, quote, on the same page with Ryan. Michelle Bachmann voted for the Ryan plan and says we need to, quote, wean everybody off Medicare. Tim Pawlenty waffled, but when cornered, said that, of course, he's for killing it. John Huntsman, supposedly the moderate in the race, says, I would have voted for it. Herman Cain, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum also are enthusiastically on board. However, in a rare moment of candor, Newt Gingrich called the plan, quote, radical right-wing social engineering. But he got a public spanking by party dogmatists, and now he says he would have voted for Ryan's scheme, too.
This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP intends to make an all-out assault on Medicare in the next Congress, but they don't want to campaign on it. So get in their face. The time to confront them is not after the elections, but now.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Show. Remember to check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. I don't know if you saw this story out of Missouri. You remember it was back in 2009, right in the heart of the healthcare debate, the right went nuts. They circulated this video. It went viral where you saw two SEIU people, you know, people in purple shirts. And, the frame was is that they were pummeling this poor guy. They were just beating him up and kicking him and, all kinds of stuff. And that, this was just a brutal, unprovoked assault. And it was just a beating. And, they went to trial. And guess what? Acquitted of all counts. And now the right is losing their mind because, as the one guy tweeted, just because SEIU thugs are found not guilty, that doesn't make them innocent of a crime. They're not guilty. At the end of the day, whether you want to say it one way or another, there were probably witnesses that said the guy probably threw the first punch, and this was a reaction. And this is what happens when you have these kind of crowds come together, and I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. I know if somebody put their finger in my face, I know if somebody did half the things I've seen other people do, I would be the one on the viral video pounding somebody. But you gotta wonder. But the right went absolutely ballistic over this. So good for them. Found not guilty. And, the right will, of course, spin this. There were probably union members on the jury. The union thugs infiltrated the jury because they're very conspiratorial. Small minds, small thought process. Again, but found not guilty. So good for them. And, Jake, as I remember this, they made such a big deal out of it. And if I remember, the guy was in a wheelchair and he did the whole, the whole funny lawsuit kind of thing, where the guy, gimps into court. And he's got the big neck band on and the bandages and the whole body cast. And as soon as the court's over, he goes out the door, he whips the neck brace off, the cast comes off, and he goes running down the street. One of those kind of deals. We've all seen it. It's this whole media manipulation where they have done such a nice job of putting this stuff out front and center and hammering on it to where even people like me were going with it. They pummel the guy for no reason because all the video shows is them beating this guy up. But when you listen to other people who were there say, look, no, the guy threw the first punch. This was a fight. And don't be surprised when somebody pops you in the nose if you throw the first punch. In my neighborhood, and I'm very proud of this, in my life I have never thrown the first punch. And I've been in thousands of fights. It was generally me running away, being tackled from behind, and then the fight began. I was one of the few white kids in the neighborhood.
You were one of the slow white kids.
I wasn't slow back then.
You were running for your life.
That's right. You learn all the shortcuts. And you learn how to scale a wall or a fence awful quick.
That was in your leaner days.
That was in my fast days anyway. That was in the days when I was not wanting to get beat up every day. Ah, the good old days. I was thinking about this the other day. It's amazing. And if I ever write an autobiography, I'm going to title it, I'm Surprised I've Lived This Long, or I Never Thought I'd Live This Long, because my mother used to beat me. The crazy nuns used to beat me constantly. All of the people in the neighborhood used to beat me. My mother's, people that my mother knew in the neighborhood would see me screwing up, and they would beat me. I mean, you know, as a kid, I think I got beaten by everybody.
And, of course, you were always totally innocent. Correct?
No. But did I deserve beatings? You know, today, you know, and I've thought of this, you know, today, 99% of the things that happened, I could sue for today. I mean, it kind of shows just how things have changed just in my lifetime. You know, back when, you know, you expected to see kids smacked around in school. Nowadays, a teacher touches a kid, it's the end of the world.
Well, there were teachers when I went to school, you had to watch what you said, because if they thought you were making a fool of them, oh, yeah, they'd give you their backhand. You're exactly right today. Well, first of all, I'm not advocating beating kids.
I am.
But in some schools, they prohibit it.
You know, but
but I'm not so sure that, you know, in certain situations, kids, you know, that's a touchy subject. I don't know if we should get into it. Well, sometimes, you know, kids deserve to be disciplined.
Is that your official position?
Yeah, I think we better keep it at that.
No, but at the end of all of this, and again, you know, the reason I brought it up is, you know, the media structure put this in such a light back then, and I remember it, that, you know, this guy was obviously guilty, and these guys were criminals, they were thugs, and the whole union thug thing came out, and they're not guilty.
Do you remember the Rand Paul situation, Rick?
Yeah.
Or that female
yeah.
protester.
His name's
Prophet. I mean, there it was, on national TV, you had some big bully
stomping this woman.
Well, no, there was a man that was holding her down. There was another man who had his foot on her head.
Stomping her head, yes.
And I don't know that he got very much out of that.
He got probation.
Probation. I mean, if that wasn't assault, my God. He was standing on her head. And there it was. We weren't exaggerating. It was right there.
Maybe she was.
Why? Because she
was asking for it.
Oh, she had a sign. It's called the First Amendment.
You and your First Amendment.
Well, you know, hey, since you brought it up, I think it's a pro. I was at last fall. I was at a Toomey rally, and a elderly woman. She was in her 60s. Had a sign, and one of the pro Toomey people, and he was a big dude, about 280 pounds, all of a sudden comes over, runs her over, takes her sign away, and. When he was confronted, he said, well, we're on private property. Well, we were in private property, but it was a public event. First of all, First Amendment doesn't end at private property. Second of all, you just assaulted the woman, and it was a public event. Well, my point is that those kind of things happen all the time. And I told him if that was me, I would have had the cops there in 5 minutes. He literally ran her over, took her sign, and tore it up.
I think I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I don't think you have total First Amendment rights on private property.
It was No.
You can't come into my house even if I invite you.
Wait a minute, Rick. It was at a business that advertised a political rally. So you can have people who attended from the public. It was touted as a public rally. First of all, he assaulted her. I don't care if you're in private property or not. He assaulted her. He knocked her down and stole her sign. It was totally inappropriate.
I agree.
It was a public event.
What your statement was is that you don't lose your First Amendment rights on private property, and I disagree with that. I don't think you have First Amendment rights on private property.
Not under those conditions.
You don't have the right to come in my house and say anything you want to me without me expelling you.
This was a business, and that's where a political rally was being held. It was a public event. It was advertised. The public at large had a right to be there.
All righty. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one,
call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Well, some of the numbers are coming in from Wisconsin. The recall is under, well, the recall process is underway. Tonight, the Democrats, the way it's looking, all of the real Democrats are going to win. And it's interesting. You look at all of the people who are opposed in the primary by used to be Republicans. So it's kind of one of those things that makes you go, they've spent a lot of money diluting the Democratic pool. And again, you know, it's one of those positions where you go, why would any Democrat vote for, a former Republican? And it's one of those things. But as it's looking, all of the real Democrats, all of the folks are looking pretty good. Shelley Moore looks like she's the only one who may have a little trouble, but, I think she's going to coast to this. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, because at the end of it, they still need three senators to flip. They need three Republicans to lose. They need to get people into those to stop some of the really drastic stuff and, you know, hold on till next election. We don't have that luxury here in Pennsylvania. We don't have the luxury of going after the Republicans who have done so much damage already. Maybe not as high as headline news as what happened in Wisconsin, but still dangerous stuff. Los Angeles as well, voters are at the polls today, should be closing in a little bit as they're trying to replace Jane Harman's seat in the 36th Congressional District there in California. This was that one. Do you remember the ad that came out by this Han guy, where he had a couple of brothers, where, you know, he really had some really nasty, this really nasty video, where they were saying, oh, we're gonna shoot this, we're gonna take our guns to the street, and we're gonna go do all this stuff, because evidently this Jane Han, she was on the city council in Los Angeles, had some gang members that, you know, she tried to get to try and quell some of the gang violence. And you've got this businessman, this Huey, who is, I guess, borrowed about $800,000 from himself to run what I'm going to guess is going to be a losing campaign. But still, he had this this ad where his opponent is now dressed up like a stripper, and they got these guys smacking her on the behind, and it was really very, very, very bizarre ad. One of those things where you go, is this really how far down the political discourse in this country has fallen?
You could say it was, dare I say it, dirty politics.
I mean, it's just kind of funny, though. You know, wow. Should I play some of it? Maybe a little. No, don't play any of it. You don't like it? All righty. No, none of the video.
So let me get this straight. He was insinuating that she was a stripper? Is that what he was insinuating?
Yeah, he was insinuating she was a stripper, and she was having money stuffed down her pants and by these two black guys. So I guess that was something the voters of Los Angeles may be turned off by. Don't know. It's not like it's Iowa or the middle of the country who would be repulsed by it. And I think the folks there in Los Angeles saw it for what it was, desperation and dirty, nasty, underhanded politic. And it's exactly what it is. I mean, you get into these elections, and that's what they turn into sometimes. When you don't have any ideas, when you don't have the ability to change course, well, this is what you get.
And the truth is, when you run for public office, they can pretty much say almost anything about you. Just about. Wow. It's a tough game. It's not a place for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the president. Speaking of not the faint of heart, this whole debt thing, getting weirder by the day. And the new IMF chairman, Christine Lagarde, she warned on Sunday that if we default on our debt, it's going to jeopardize global economic stability. And you go, yeah, that's what I've been saying all along. The rest of the world, and this is what the right tells us all the time, that the rest of the world looks to us because we're exceptional. Are we behaving exceptionally? Are we behaving like we deserve to have the exceptional label? I don't think so. And you look at the reality. You had Mitch McConnell who came out and said, well, you know, raising the debt ceiling, probably not going to happen. While Obama's in office. It's unlikely. He says, I have a little question that as long as this president's in the Oval Office, a real solution is unattainable. And remember, his idea is you'd make this guy a one-term president. That's McConnell's position. Nothing else enters into his mind. The whole running the country, the whole governing, it's all about how do we defeat Obama. And this is how they think they can do it. They think they can defeat him by doing this. So people go, what? I can't believe you actually said that. At least not out loud, that you honestly are saying that nothing can be done. And he kind of stepped back a little bit, came up with this bizarre kind of plan that I'm still trying to figure out what the idea is, other than shifting responsibility from the Republicans who have created this mess into Obama's lap so that they can say, well, Obama raised the debt ceiling, not us. Granted, we ceded our ability to do that. We ceded all control over to him. And there's part of me in reading what I'm looking at that says, if I'm the president, I take that. I say, okay, I will take it. And I am going to cut all subsidies to multinational corporations. I'm going to cut subsidies that go to corporations at offshore jobs. We're going to start slashing and burning the things that have buoyed up corporate America for so long and fattened their bottom lines.
From what I understand, Rick, there's commentators that are saying that offer is pretty close to Obama's original position. I think what is happening here, I think McConnell, who's obviously financed well by the corporate, I think some of the people in corporate America are saying to McConnell, you know, hey, you can't let this happen. You're going to hurt us too much. That's just my take on it. I agree with you. When you look at it, you know, it doesn't look all that bad, considering the hellacious fight that's going on the last couple of weeks.
You know, at the end of it, I think what's happened is the Republicans have backed themselves into a corner with this, we're not going to raise revenues, and all we want to do is cut, cut, cut. And I think the American people, and I was saying it for the longest time, you can't do this on cutting alone. There's not enough out there. There's not enough waste, fraud, and abuse. That office just isn't as wealthy as it used to be. They've cut the budget of the Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Bureau. Now you're cutting down to the bone. You're cutting down to where it's really going to hurt real people. And I think they're figuring this out. And they're figuring out that when Obama came out and said, look, we don't get this done, we may not have Social Security checks going out on August 3rd. May not happen. If we can't come to a compromise, he says, I can't guarantee those checks are going to go out on August 3rd if we haven't resolved the issue. He said, because simply there may not be money in the coffers to do it. And, of course, the Republicans are losing their mind. Oh, well, that's a cheap shot. It's reality. It's like we talked about the other day. Admiral Mullins came out and said, look, they don't pass this debt ceiling. We got veterans aren't going to get paid. We got soldiers' families aren't going to get paid. We got to have money in the bank. We can't have them take checks to the bank and have them come bouncing back to us. But, you know, the reality is, and the this policy center has said that if the Social Security's checks, if we don't have this deal, almost certainly would not go out in August if the two sides failed. And, you know, you stop and you think about this and you go, maybe this is what we need. Maybe this is the kind of thing that has to happen. You know, the Republicans want us to go down this path. They want us to feel the wrath of pain. They want to test the waters and see what if. Personally, as I've said, I'm scared of the consequences that happen as the rest of the world looks at us. And there's part of me that says, you know, I buy into some of the right-wing frame that, you know, we are a country that much has been given and much is expected of us. We're expected to act a certain way. We're expected to have a stable government. And that's one of the things that we've said about ourselves. We're so wonderful because our government, we have government stability. This is not looking stable to the rest of the world. This is looking like people who don't know what they're doing. And this plan that McConnell's come up with is basically just going, we don't know what to do. You do it. We're going to blame you for it anyway. You do it.
But. McConnell doesn't have the problem that Boehner does. I mean, let's be honest. Boehner has a leadership problem. And the guy that's supposed to be his partner, his right-hand man in leadership, is the guy that wants his job. Now, McConnell doesn't have that problem.
I don't know that Boehner has a leadership problem. I think he's got a crazy member problem. I think he's got too many...
Oh, no. You have someone...
I think he's got too many crazy...
You have someone that wants his job.
Of course. But you're always going to have that.
Yeah, but it's pretty obvious in the maneuvers.
Of course it is. But the problem is you've got factions within the party, which I'm very happy to see, by the way, because they are eating themselves, and they are making it painfully apparent that they don't know how to govern, that they don't know how to lead, and it's all about how do we maneuver, how do we manipulate, how do we roadblock so that we can take advantage of it at campaign time. Because, again, you look at their grand pledge. They said they were going to create jobs. Nothing. And you go back to this whole debt problem. This whole debt problem is pure and simple. The fact that we have a massive, massive trade deficit and have had for generations now. Since the mid-70s, we have had trade deficits. Massive trade deficits. Because we've continued to outsource our jobs, continued to allow corporations to move overseas, continued to lose our productive capability. Why? We need to feed the beast at the top. You need to feed the insatiable appetite of the Wall Street monster, who needs to make sure that they fill the coffers of the venture capitalists and the hedge fund managers. And yes, to a small degree, the people who own 401ks and the people who are investing for their retirement. I'm right there. And that was the mastery that was really the mastery of the Wall Street monster's plan, to get you to buy into 401ks so that every day you run to the newspaper and go, how are my stocks doing? And you run to the newspaper and go, oh, how's this company doing? Because I got stock in that. I got 3 shares. Woo! And they got you thinking like them. So, you know, like I said with, you know, my thesis paper. You know, I'm looking at the other students in the class, and they're going, how do we squeeze more profit? How do we manipulate the system so that we can do away with redundancy and efficiency? And I always ask the question, once you've done away with redundancy and you've made things so efficient that you don't need any more workers, what happens to the working class? You know, when you see these mass consolidations, which is why I'm against seeing these huge multinational corporations grow to 100, 200,000 employees. Because, you know, eventually, they're going to start paring back down. When you see two big conglomerates combining, you know you're going to lose half the jobs eventually. Because one worker is going to eventually do the job of two. And what happens to the rest of society? And that's what we've seen. We've synergized ourselves right out of jobs. We've reduced redundancy to where now we have massive unemployment. So for me, it's not only our trade policy, it's also the way we allow corporations and the way we do not enforce our antitrust laws. So there's a whole bunch of problems here. And it comes out of Washington. And what we're being fed, this deficit talk, while it's important, to me is not the big issue. The massive issue is our trade, our structural trade policy, the way the globe is set up trade-wise, the fact that we have used Latin America and the Third World as our manufacturing base for cheap products, for high profitable cheap products to bring back into this country. The same companies that were making it here are the same companies making it in China, the same companies making it in Taiwan or making it in Sri Lanka or Guatemala or, you know, the other 140 countries that we have American corporations in. It's all about bringing that stuff back in. And do those workers benefit? The answer is no, because they're not set up to have domestic consumption. They're set up on an export model. Why? Because our IMF gave them loans and set it up that way. I mean, it's really ingenious what the global bankers, what the global profiteers have done. You got to give them credit. They're masters. They manipulated the system to where now we're paying for it all. And they're benefiting. So when I hear simple minds going, well, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. You're damn right I am. Because it's been redistributed away from you and me upward. And I love Greenhouse's frame. How come we're not hearing about rich and wealthy people from the Republicans? It's all about job creators. And they are job creators in places like China, in places like India, just not here. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, all Union signs and promos will do it with a memorable and unique Union-made and American-made product. For more information about Union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers, backstabbers, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers, backstabbers.
Yeah, if you're President Obama, you got to kind of be feeling that way. When you look at Republican presidential candidate and nopeful John Huntsman, you know, he was, of course, you know, he was the governor there of Utah. He was also Obama's appointee to be U.S. ambassador to China. And while he was in South Carolina beating up on workers and in South Carolina pushing his right-wing agenda, you know, we need more free markets, we need free markets. The head of the Democratic Party there said, you know, here's a guy who had his lips firmly planted on the president's butt 3 months ago, and now he's speaking ill of him out of those same lips. Can you trust a guy who turns this quickly? He is somebody who apparently will say anything to get elected. And, you know, I go back to the, to Arlen Specter, you know, whatever to do to get elected. And, you know, these politicians, these right-wingers, you got to wonder if the insanity that they're spewing is what they really believe, or is this the torch that the right has put on them and making them carry? Is this the cross that they have to carry to get the nomination? We need to be as crazy as possible. We need to talk about the extreme things. And I look at, you know, someone like Herman Cain, who was just really just way out there on the fringe with some of his, I'm a constitutional guy and we should reread the Constitution. And even though he misquotes it all the time. I agree. Maybe the Godfather pizza guy should do that. And again, he showed another foreign policy gaffe. And look, I know that 99% of the people in this country have no idea that we have not, as a nation, recognized Taiwan as a independent nation. We've kind of stayed away from that. Back in the 50s, we did, when Eisenhower sent the Pacific Fleet to surround Taiwan and tell the Chinese, leave them alone. Yeah, we did that back in the 50s. But since Nixon, not so much. And we haven't really taken official position. In fact, we've kind of just bought into that whole one nation policy that China's trying to push. We haven't really said it, but kind of ambiguous. But Herman Cain, the Herman Cain train, he said, I think we already recognize the democratically elected government. And he, as the guy says, he looked visibly confused. Now, understand, 99% of the people of this country don't know that. And I'm sure the majority of those don't care. This guy wants to be president of the United States of America. And this is the conversation that has to be had. Do we want somebody who is this misinformed? Do we want somebody in the White House who thinks that Paul Revere was riding down the road firing warning shots to warn the British? Like Wyatt Earp, do we want that person in the White House? I got to be honest. I want someone smarter than me. I want someone smarter than a talk show host. I want someone who has, I want a big brain. I want a thinker. I want somebody who's going to be able to critically think, analyze a problem, and choose a course of action. Along with being decisive, but being one of those people who, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and we'll change course. You learn as you go. But I want people who are at least, you know, before they open their mouths, they think. And I look at Newt Gingrich, who I really, there's part of me thought that he was a smart guy. He was an academic. He was a college professor. You know, on a number of levels, he's supposed to be, you know, a smart guy. Saying that there's no Supreme Court in the American Constitution. He said there's the court, which is the supreme of the legislative branch, but it's not supreme over the legislature or the executive branch. And he says that basically what we should be able to do, whatever we want them to hear, we should be able to let them hear it. And, in fact, his quote went like this. He said, in an American system, if you read the Constitution correctly, this is why I wrote A Nation Like No Other. If you read the Federalist Papers correctly, the fact is that Congress can pass a law and can limit the court's jurisdiction. It's written directly into the Constitution. The Federalist Papers, Alexander promises. Hamilton, he promises. And I think it's number 78, that the judiciary branch is the weakest of the three branches. Personally, I thought they were equals, but that's a whole other thing. He said, there's no Supreme Court in the American Constitution. There's the court, which is the supreme of the judicial branch. It's not supreme over the legislature and the executive branch. We now have this entire national elite that wants us to believe that any five lawyers are constitutional convention. That is profoundly un-American and profoundly wrong. And, you know, if you read Article 3 of the Constitution, it begins pretty clearly. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court. So again, you know, you got to go, did you go to the Herman Cain School of Constitution? Because it is right there in writing. And this idea that you can simply, you know, strip out the jurisdiction of the court, I'm sorry, that's a direct attack on the Constitution itself. So I'm kind of worried that you have these people who really have some of these weird ideas. And Gingrich is one of those guys I thought had half a brain. You know, I look at here recently, he's taken the Michelle Bachmann frame. Reiterating Michelle Bachmann's frame and going even further, that the EPA is a job-killing, anti-business, anti-local control, Washington-centered, radical bureaucracy. Now look, I grew up in the home of the Clean Water Act. Cleveland, Ohio is the home of the Clean Water Act and really the home of the EPA. Because, and I'm sure everybody knows it, 1969, the Cuyahoga River caught on fire. Because it was polluted so badly. So you had all this pollution in the water. You had all this crap in the water. The steel mills were just pouring stuff in. It caught on fire. The water burned. And now you've got presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich citing the incident as an example of poor stewardship of the environment. It's poor stewardship. You're damn right it's poor stewardship. It's because nobody was watching. There was no cop on the job. There was nobody on the beat. And I love his proposition. We do away with the Environmental Protection Agency. And we replace it with the Environmental Solutions Agency. Really? Is that the thing there? I'm kind of just going, Newty, what are you thinking, man? So he goes on. He said, you know, when I was teaching environmental studies, you know, we looked at the Cuyahoga River. It's on fire there in Cleveland. And he says, I don't care how conservative you are. You do not want rivers to be on fire. It's a real bad sign of how pollution was there. So the steps we took were common sense, he said, that cleaned up the Cuyahoga River, that cleaned up all sorts of places around the country. Those are good steps. We have a cleaner and healthier environment today than we did in 1970. And he's right. And the question is why, Newty? Why did we have a cleaner environment than we had back in 1970? Oh, yeah, things like the Clean Water and Clean Air Act. Things like the EPA. That's right, Newt. You know, when I was a kid, there was nothing living in Lake Erie. And Cleveland.com points out that when regulations took effect in 72, the Federal Water Pollution Control Administration found no visible signs of life. Now, no leeches, no sludge worms, nothing. Nothing. And today, EPA scientists have found 40 different species of fish. That's because the Clean Water Act made a big difference. That's because the Cleveland Clean Water Act did what it was supposed to. And we didn't have nitwits going, we need an Environmental Solutions Agency. Ding dong. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. If you think things are getting bad, let's go back into the past and see how they used to be. We're right back after this.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As President Obama was talking Monday about cuts to Medicare and Social Security being on the table in the federal debt ceiling negotiations with Republican House leadership, the AFL-CIO, Change to WIN, Demos, and the Economic Policy Institute hosted a jobs forum. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka joined Center for American Progress senior economist Heather Boucher, Senate Ways and Means Committee Democrat ranking member Sandra Levin, and others to draw a sharp contrast between what's really needed to create jobs and the austerity budget cutting that's dominating both political parties in Washington. Boucher says more and more economists are concluding that the economy is faltering from lack of demand. So she says rather than doing austerity cuts, government should invest in infrastructure aid to the states, education, and long-term unemployment benefits to create and help sustain the economic demand that creates jobs. Primary elections are being held today in the Wisconsin State Senate recall elections. Republicans put up fake Democratic candidates to run against real Democrats in these primaries to buy more time for the Republican recall targets. Six Republican Wisconsin State Senators will face recall elections August 9th. They're being recalled for voting to destroy public worker collective bargaining. Goodyear workers in Tennessee get a rude surprise. Jesse Russell reports.
Employees at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company's Union City, Tennessee plant arrived to work on Sunday and Monday to receive unexpected news. The company had shut down production and was moving ahead with a full closure earlier than anticipated. In February, Goodyear said it would be shuttering the plant by the end of the year, but moved up that timeline due to the ability to fulfill orders through production at other facilities. The employees will be paid for 60 days of work due to the federal WARN Act. The closure impacts nearly 1,800 employees.
The California Supreme Court ruled at the end of June that non-resident employees of California-based employers are subject to the state's overtime laws. Under the court's opinion, if an employee isn't a resident of the state but during the year works in California for full days or weeks, they must receive overtime. The lawsuit was brought by three instructors for Oracle Corporation who travel the country educating customers on how to use Oracle products. The instructors live in Colorado and Arizona, but on occasion would work in California. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the International Chamber of Commerce, they're saying, well, government regulations, that's what's destroying our economy. We need to do the things that we, deregulation, more tax cuts, these job-killing regulations just harming American jobs. In fact, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, said that it's unjustifiable. And uncalled for in a free society, in a free economy, and it's killing American jobs to have all of these regulations. Just can't have it. Can't have the Wall Street reform. Can't have health care. Just killing us. And, I listen to this rhetoric, and it's It's exactly the stuff that they were saying back when FDR was trying to pass the New Deal. And it's eerie, and it's scary, and it shows how much we haven't been paying attention to our history. But the people over at the Cry Wolf Project, crywolfproject.org, have done a piece, and I've asked their director, Donald Cohen, to come talk to us a little bit about what their work and what they've published. Donald, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
You know, I look at some of these statements by people like the guy from the International Chamber of Commerce there, saying, you know, these regulations, they're just too, they're going to kill us. We can't have it. And I look back to, you know, what we did with the FDIC insurance. I look back to the SEC, things that worked for many, many years. And in the case of the FDIC, worked very well during the collapse of 2008.
That's right. Well, you know, when the Great Depression happened and the, you know, the stock market collapsed in the, you know, in the late 20s and the, you know, as the depression went into the 30s, you know, there was realization that government had a role to make sure that the economy was, you know, was stable and in good shape, an important role. And so those were, you know, some of the laws that were passed in the, you know, during the New Deal, like the creation of the FDIC that we all rely on to say, you know, when we put our money in the bank, we know that there's a, you know, that there's an insurance fund that'll pay us, that our money is secure. You know, that was established in the early 30s. Just right, you know, and what the chamber and banking community said in the early 30s, is the same thing they're saying today. They said this is government involvement. This will kill, you know, free enterprise. This will hurt the economy. This will, you know, this will prolong the depression. It's, you know, that's, which is what they're saying today about the new financial regulation, Dodd-Frank, the new financial reform. And, you know, when you get to look back at what they said and then you get to look at what actually occurred, the FDIC is widely credited by conservative economists, Milton Friedman and the conservative economists, saying this is one of the, you know, the institutions that kept the economy stable and kept our financial institutions and banking institutions stable. So, you know, we call it cry wolf because they scream, you know, they say the sky will fall every time government wants to get involved. And in fact, what happens after the facts, you know, whether it's the FDIC or the minimum wage, which also was passed in the, you know, during the New Deal, fact is, those things don't happen, and really positive things do happen.
You know, one of the things that I said right in 2009 when President Obama took office is my hope was that we followed some of the things that they did in the New Deal, pass labor law reform, so that when corporations decide that they want to go back to paying their CEOs staggering sums, that there are workers there saying, well, if you're going to pay yourself that well, we'd like some of it to help buoy the economy and help get consumers' money in their pockets. Because as we're seeing, corporate profits have never been better, and workers' wages are actually declining. And to me, that's what's killing the economy.
Well, that's exactly right. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the sort of the think their front think tanks and their organizations they've created, and in basic industry associations have, you know, developed enormous political power and enormous resources. People like the Koch brothers, that money is very real, has a real impact on politicians, has a real impact on the public. You know, Murdoch, who's in the news today, has had a huge impact on the public through Fox and through you know, the Wall Street Journal. That, you know, right now there's, when they say those things are job killers, they're trying to tap into people's real fears. And what we've got to do is say, but, you know, they said it before and it wasn't true. And in fact, what they're doing is getting in the way of things that will protect people, protect families, protect workers, and obviously benefit them.
You know, you brought up the minimum wage a second ago, and, you know, we every time they bring up raising the minimum wage, even just a small amount, we hear the same thing. It's going to cost jobs. It's going to, you know, it's going to harm small business. And we find out that it didn't happen. All of this smear, all of this fear that they're throwing out there doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, what we're trying to do is something real simple. You know, I remember Ronald Reagan used to say, there they go again, just to dismiss, you know, his political opponents. That's what we want elected officials to say. You know, there you go again. You said it before. It wasn't true. You're saying it again. Why should we believe you now? In fact, we shouldn't. Because now we have the benefit of the record of history.
Yep.
The minimum wage has helped millions of people. And every time it goes up, whether it be at the federal level, the state level, they say exactly the same thing. It'll kill the economy. Jobs will be lost. And it never happens. So why do we keep fighting the same fight over and over again?
What's interesting to me, though, is you still have people who vote for Republicans, even though, and there are a lot of centrist Democrats as well that seem to want to repeal the 20th century and go back to the way the things were in the 19th century, before we had labor laws, before we had minimum wage, maximum hour laws. We want to go back to the Lochner days where, you know, hey, liberty of contract. If you agreed to have your boss screw you over, then that's what happens.
Right. Well, you know, they've really, you know, never really changed their opinion. They just were on the losing side for, you know, 50 years. You know, there are folks that fought the New Deal during the New Deal, and right after the New Deal, you know, we had some very bad labor laws passed, and, you know, a whole set of, you know, bad things. You know, what's dangerous about what's now is that they're so well healed, you know, that they've, you know, and they're close to power, you know, certainly in Congress and in state houses around the country, that they're actually carrying out some of this, what, you know, is really insane stuff. I mean, there are people now, as you mentioned, that believe that are actually verbalizing presidential candidates, you know, repealing the Fair Labor Standards Act, the minimum wage, just repealing it because of what you say. There are people talking about child labor again.
Are you as taken back by this as I am? I mean, you know, things that I thought were the third rail of politics, Social Security, child labor laws, things that I thought we would never have to go back and fight for again, we're actually having to defend. And, you know, when I hear Republicans now saying, well, we need to strengthen Social Security, I hearken back to the 30s and some of the reading I've done on how they wanted to destroy it right from the beginning and how they've wanted to destroy Social Security all along. And to hear them say, well, we need to strengthen it. By what? Privatizing it? Is that how you strengthen something?
Well, if you remember, I mean, we wouldn't. But Alf Landon ran for president in 1936 on the platform of repealing Social Security because he said it would destroy America. You know, he obviously lost, and he was obviously wrong. You know, I'm not surprised that they're making the same arguments because they really fundamentally haven't changed their views. What I am surprised about is the gap between where people are, because people are not, don't support the repeal of the minimum wage. They don't support the elimination or the privatization of Social Security. They don't support the repeal of the Clean Air Act and any of the other regulatory, other laws that we put into place in the 20th century. Yet these folks still, you know, the Republicans, the Chamber, the Koch brothers, they still drive forward, even though the people really, you know, all the polling data shows that people aren't with them. We've got to crack that. Our challenge is make sure that's really clear, that they're on the wrong side of people. Because, you know, when you talk about regulation, when you talk about government, that's very abstract. So we need to, you know, they need to talk about what's real about that. When you talk about regulating air pollution, you're talking about people breathing poison.
Yep. I talk about where I grew up. In fact, I just talked about it a second ago, because Newt Gingrich said we need to do away with the EPA. Because, you know, during the, when, where I lived in Cleveland, when the river caught on fire, because we weren't good stewards. I lived through, the Clean Water Act, turning the Lake Erie from a dead lake into one that is now thriving. In fact, has too much life in it. But, you know, I lived through that where you didn't go swimming in Lake Erie. You didn't go anywhere near it because there were things floating on top of it that no one could identify.
That's right. And, you know, in our challenge, there's a, you know, one of the things that's important to do in politics and discussion, you know, in public opinion, public education, all that, is to talk about, as you're doing now, talk about the real things. Because the Republicans don't really want to do that. When you ask them, a colleague who was an investigative journalist and called the chairs of the congressional committees, Republican chairs of the congressional committees since the midterm elections, and asked them, so tell me specifically which, you know, so-called job-killing regulations you would like to repeal, they had no examples.
Right.
They couldn't talk about that. They'll talk about regulation. They'll talk about government. They'll talk about abstractions, but they won't talk about clean water, and they won't talk about clean air, and they won't talk about, you know, Social Security in real ways, that in terms of how much money is going to end up in people's pockets. And that's our challenge, to get them to talk about real things.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we try to do here on the program, is to bring it home. How's it going to affect me? How's it going to affect working people in this country? Because, the Republicans and a lot of their Democratic apologists follow along or right along are the ones who want to destroy everything that we've built in this past this past 70 years. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Donald Cohen, director of the Cry Wolf Project. CryWolfProject.org is our website. Their paper is Industry Repeats Itself, the Financial Reform Fight. And you know, part of this, you know, I look at this Dodd-Frank bill. I look at the agency that they want to set up to protect consumers. And the right is just losing their ever-loving freaking mind. And I'm going, you know, in 30 years, are we going to look back on this and say, that's exactly what we needed? Personally, I would like to go back and reinstate Glass-Steagall, put the genie back in the bottle, and separate banks from being gambling houses, but that's probably not going to happen. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I agree with you, and I think we're in a pretty turbulent period and difficult to predict and even imagine how the next 10 years will unfold. You know, our economy is so fundamentally broken, and our financials, jobs getting created now are McDonald's jobs. People really are struggling. These are structural changes to the economy. Our financial system is in so much control and power, and now global, which is really in a very different kind of way. So it's hard to imagine how that's going to unfold. What's not hard to imagine, pardon the noise behind me, is that people will continue to suffer. People will, the economic decline for real working and middle class people will absolutely continue without dramatic action. And that's, so I think given that, there will be calls for real change coming forward.
Well, I said right when the collapse happened that, maybe this is that moment where people's stomachs get empty and their heads get right, because there are so many problems we face. Our trade deficit, these bizarre trade policies that encourage the offshoring of jobs and the opening up of capital markets so that the investor class can move their money all around, but we can't move people around. You have these situations where the working people in all countries are at the mercy of Wall Street and the finance elite.
And I think, what really needs to be talking about and articulating is a vision of what we are as a nation or what we are as a world. But, first what we are as a nation, because we're better as a nation than, than the vision that the Koch brothers and the Republicans in the chamber are putting out. People are, they want to breathe clean air. They want to see clean water. They want to send their kids to school. They want the next generation to have an opportunity. This is really about who we are as a people. And we need to articulate that so that the Tea Party is articulating a vision that, because they're articulating a very different vision for people.
Yeah, and a very twisted vision. We had the local, the Tea Party down in Philly, the Independents, all Tea Twizzlers came out and said, well, we want to privatize all schools. We don't want any public schools, which is the next battlefront.
My gosh.
Yeah,
that's not who we are. There is a role for private enterprise in American economy. That's all well and good. But there is an incredible role for public enterprise and for public structures and for governments to do the things that we want to do together as a people that simply can't be done by the private sector. And that's important for us to describe. You can't, privatize, prisons, for example, without prison companies, wanting more people in prison. That's not our social goals. That's not our political goals. You can't privatize Social Security and then expect Wall Street not to want to take advantage of millions and millions of new customers.
Well, I mean, they're going to be as responsible with the Social Security money as they were with my 401k money.
That's exactly. So it's about who we are as a people, and it's about what the public needs to do as a public. Those are important values to articulate. Those are important ideas to articulate. And it's not hearing it that much from Washington. So we need to be able to do it all around. We need to do it all around the country.
And that's why I think the work you guys are doing is fantastic.
I do want to mention that the report that we did that you're discussing, we did in partnership with Public Citizen, which is a fabulous organization that works on all of these issues. And so, people can look on their website as well.
All righty. And again, the website, CryWolfProject.org. The Industry Repeats Itself is the name of the report, The Financial Reform Fight. I suggest taking a look at it, Donald Cohen. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. To the last of us, fight till we die. To the king of the kingdom on high. All thanks together for the world.
to talk.
Remember the hoorahs from Republicans just 4 months ago when House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan issued the GOP's, quote, bold plan to slash federal spending? Gosh, how quickly that cheering turned to silence. That's because the budgetary jewel in Ryan's creation was the elimination of Medicare. He proposed replacing it with a privatized voucher program that would pay only a fraction of what Medicare covers. This turns out to be a spectacularly stupid idea, resulting in angry seniors showing up at one of Ryan's town hall meetings to whack him over the head with his own proposal. The bold plan suddenly had a stench worse than week-old roadkill, and Republicans are now trying to disown it. But don't mistake the GOP's sudden squeamishness for meaning that Ryan's Let's Kill Medicare effort has gone away. The big stinker is still in the Republican budget and still a core tenet of right-wing orthodoxy. Indeed, all eight of the party's presidential contenders are on record in favor, but not publicizing it. Mitt Romney says he's, quote, on the same page with Ryan. Michelle Bachmann voted for the Ryan plan and says we need to, quote, wean everybody off Medicare. Tim Pawlenty waffled, but when cornered, said that, of course, he's for killing it. John Huntsman, supposedly the moderate in the race, says, I would have voted for it. Herman Cain, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum also are enthusiastically on board. However, in a rare moment of candor, Newt Gingrich called the plan, quote, radical right-wing social engineering. But he got a public spanking by party dogmatists, and now he says he would have voted for Ryan's scheme, too. This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP intends to make an all-out assault on Medicare in the next Congress, but they don't want to campaign on it. So get in their face. The time to confront them is not after the elections, but now.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
My name is Michelle Bachmann. I stand here in the midst of many friends and many family members to announce formally my candidacy for President of the United States.
Yay! Woo! Yay! Golf clap. Yay! That was the highlight of her campaign so far. The fact that she announced, I'm running! And she had like six people there. Very, very nice. She's also kind of gotten herself into a little hot water, at least I think. I think the sane, rational people are going, what, the only way you'll consider raising the debt ceiling is if it's tied to defunding Obamacare. That's what she said. That's her thing. And people are going, well, wait a second, that's kind of a short-sighted view because it ain't going to happen. You're not going to get that. Sorry, sit down. Ever since she announced, I mean, have you noticed this, Jake, that ever since she's announced, we knew she was crazy, but it's gotten progressively worse. I mean, every story that comes out is worse than the last one. In fact, you know, she claimed at one point that she was attacked by a nun. And you go, really? Attacked by a nun? I understand attacked by nuns. I was attacked by nun quite often. You know, she said she was, you know, she was all upset that they threw glitter on her and evidently called the police because they threw glitter on her. Said that two lesbians tried to abduct her or tried to hold her prisoner while she was in a bathroom. You know, going, you know, sorry, Michelle, woohoo, over here, honey.
Well, if you listen to her on this budget deficit thing, she basically said she won't support anything. She said if he brings in $1 of raising taxes, according to her, she won't support it. So basically she's saying, I won't support it, period. Unequivocally. And her position is not that much different than a lot of the teabaggers in Congress.
But it's just plain funny. I mean, really, if you stop and think about it. But, you know,
I'd like to know more about that nun thing.
Well, I mean, Bachmann came out at some town hall thing, and she, you know, started talking the anti-gay stuff. You know, we need to ban same-sex marriages, and, you know, now we find out that her husband's actually, you know, doing some of that. We can change you. We can transform you. And I'm going, really? You know, because here's the thing, and this is what I don't understand. I don't understand what it is about folks like this who think that they can change people. You can pray until the cows come home, I don't think that I can change you, Jake, to like men. Don't think that's possible. I mean, maybe you do. I don't know. But I don't think I can pray and have you change that. I know you can't pray enough to change me. So what makes these nitwits think that, oh, if we just prayed harder, that we can change what this person's preference is? I mean, I'm just not getting this whole idea. Anyway, in 2005, she was having this town hall, and, you know, someone wanted to actually question her, so she sprinted off. She ran into the bathroom to hide, you know, wait for her aides, I don't know, and this former nun and a friend followed her into the bathroom to ask her some questions. And she's in there, help me, somebody get me out of here, oh, you're holding me against my will. And I'm going, cuckoo, cuckoo. I'm going, really? This is how a congressman acts? And we're going to continue to hear more of this. Look, this is the tip of the iceberg. When the crazy gates open, there's no turning back. And we are now going to see crazy train. Every day I expect to hear something crazier than I heard yesterday.
She's going to have to answer a couple things about her husband and his business, first of all, the government money coming in there, but beyond that, she's going to have to answer some questions about his techniques. She was questioned several times now, and both times she ignored it.
Well,
she said, I'm here to talk about my presidential campaign, and she refused to ignore it. Well, I got news for her. She's not running for dog catcher now. She's playing in the big leagues. She needs to get her grown-up panties on. Because I guarantee you that issue is not going to go away. She's going to have to address it.
Well, look at you with the panty reference. One of my favorite.
Well, I have a friend who frequently uses it.
One of my favorite Michelle Bachmann quotes is that she wants to do away with the minimum wage. And during the break, I got an email from Ron who writes, Rick, recently I heard a right-wing economist say that we don't need a minimum wage because workers are paid at a rate higher than their value. He said that the, quote-unquote, the market would set a fair wage. Ron asks, how quickly would the market set that fair wage to zero? And again, we learned that from the Depression. We learned where we'll work for food was too much to ask. We learned that we'll work for enough food to feed my children was still too much to ask, which is why they came in and they put a floor underneath wages. But again, we don't remember that stuff. We don't spend time learning it in school. We don't teach our children that stuff because we are so far removed. The mass of people who lived through the Depression and who remember the pain and the suffering and the breadlines and the unemployment and the work projects, most of those people are going by the wayside now. They're going on to the great never, never. And maybe that's our problem. We don't have enough people to remind us of how horrible things were. I was fortunate. My mother worked in a crummy, rotten, miserable, horrible nursing home. Probably one of the worst places on earth because it was for indigent folks. These are people who had nothing. And they were warehoused, to be honest. I mean, they were overcrowded, understaffed, the whole nine yards. And I would come after school because I had to wait for my mother to get off work, and I would talk to the people. And they would tell me stories, which is where I heard, the best story, and I use it all the time. The one guy told me he had 19 kids. And I said, you had 19 kids? Why'd you have 19 kids? And he said, because we didn't have television. And I didn't get that joke until I was probably in my teens, probably until 10 years later. But I listened to their stories because these people were in their 60s and 70s, back in the 70s. So they lived through the heart of it. They worked through it. It was their life. And the stories they told of struggle and heartache and misery and pain, I remember. And I don't want that for my children. I don't want that for your children. So when I hear people like Boehner and I hear people like Cantor and I hear all these right-wing nitwits going, well, we need to cut government spending. We need to shrink the amount of money that we're putting into the economy at the worst possible time. It tells me that we've got people who don't understand what it's like to go without. We got people who don't know what it's like to suffer running this country. And maybe we need average, everyday working people to take those positions. But guess what? You and me ain't getting there because we're never going to raise the money necessary. Just never going to happen. And you look at this whole minimum wage argument, and again, it goes back down to, you know, what kind of a society do we want to have? Do we want to live in poverty? Do we want to have two classes, those who are doing very, very well, and the rest of us who fight for crumbs? Because that's where we're heading, folks. The direction that we're going, big trouble. And when you start looking at cutting Social Security, and you start looking at destroying Medicare and destroying Medicaid, these are things that helped create and sustain a working middle class, a non-poverty class. And understand what Social Security was supposed to be. It was an anti-poverty program. It was to lift the seniors out of poverty so that they never, we drew that line and said, no more. No more. And yet we've got a party who wants to destroy it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ken Bazinet from Talk Radio News Service. We're right back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? Thing, that's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Ken Bizinet, Talk Radio News Service. Ken, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
What's going on in the big city?
Different day, same story.
Yep.
House and Senate leaders from both parties came over to the White House today. And from what I can tell, they made no progress on the negotiations. But a couple of interesting volleys fired from both sides. Let's start with President Obama. Very interesting interview with CBS News's Evening News' Scott Pelley, in which the president just came flat out and said, look, come August 3rd, when 70 million Social Security, disability, and veterans checks need to go out, he's not sure it could happen if they don't pass the deal by the day before.
Yeah, if they don't have the money, they can't send it out.
And that's it. And, of course, you know, the other side cried foul, and conservative radio, I've been on the phone today with about 18 centrist or conservative stations, and people have just gone on the other side really, really angry, feeling that the president's blindsided them.
How could he do that? How could he scare those poor people who depend on those checks? Well, the reality is what it is, folks.
Yeah, listen, we've been doing this since the Reagan administration, i.e. raising debt limits And neither you nor I have ever seen anything like this before. So I'm not sure that the president picked this fight, but I am sure that he's joined it.
And I think, you know, to his credit, he is winning. I said the other day, when he put Social Security on the table, I hope he's not doing something stupid. I hope he's a good poker player, because if this hand he's dealt turns out to be a winner, we should put him on Texas Hold'em, and maybe we could solve our deficit problems.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that your gambling instinct and analogy paid off. I mean, he had Speaker Boehner, you know, halfway there. You and I discussed this last week. It was a 50-50 proposition up from a zero proposition. And then the extreme right wing, the man who wants to take his job from him, it's looking more and more like GOP House Leader Eric Cantor, got to him. And then we had that stunning announcement on Saturday saying no big deal.
Yeah.
And the $4 trillion was off the table. And, you know, the moral victory and high ground, I think, went to Palace 1600, the president, you know. But here's the real curveball today, I think. Senator Mitch McConnell hinted over the weekend that he had some kind of a scheme cooking, and he's got a doozy. But it's a bank shot and a bank shot and a bank shot. What he's proposing is having Congress vote against raising the debt limit, passing it, and the president vetoes it. Then the president sends it back to Congress, and Congress is unable to override it. And by default, therefore, the debt limit passes. Now, that may be against Article 1 of the Constitution, where you're supposed to outright pass a budget measure,
right,
as we all know. But it's an interesting scheme. Personally, I think it's dead on arrival, but the Democrats are insisting that, no, we're going to consider this.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to come flat out before you've actually, you know, gone back and done a little thinking on this to come out and just on a reaction just say no, because you don't want to be a Republican, because that's what a Republican would do. You know, I look at this and again, you know, it's about shifting responsibility, and I think you're right. I think the Republicans know they're in trouble, and now they've got to figure out how to dump this in the lap of the president, and it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
No, very, very interesting to see where this goes. The other thing I think that we have to mention here is, beginning yesterday on Wall Street, Wall Street tanked yesterday. The market took a little bit of a hit yesterday. Well, it crossed the big pond, the Pacific, and markets in Asia started to take a hit. And as the timeline moved, markets continued to take a hit in Asia. And then when it got to Europe, markets started to take a hit. And did take a hit, and then when it came back here, our market took another hit here. So in 24 hours, the global markets all tanked a bit today. And I spent an awful lot of time reading and listening to analysts beginning at 4 o'clock this morning, quite frankly, and just about every minute I could get my hands on something or watching the financial networks. And quite frankly, you know, the majority opinions were that there were two reasons for this. Number one, the debt crisis in Europe. Number two, the debt shenanigans in Washington.
Yep.
At some point, somebody's going to have to get the memo. If the markets are already taking a hit now, and we're not even at the deadline yet,
yep.
I'm starting to worry about my mom's IRA and 401k, with all due respect.
Well, I'm starting to worry about entering a depression, seeing the complete collapse, which, you know, part of me says there are those on the right who would be very happy with that. It'll make their election prospects in 2012 that much greater, because you can pin it on the black guy in the White House.
Yeah, you could. You know what? To watch this guy do these negotiations, I'd be very careful.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he is a counterpuncher.
He's showing me something that I didn't think he had, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's in our 3 or 4 weeks of chatting. And bouncing ideas off each other, that's something new.
Well, on this issue, I got to be honest, I'm still infuriated with him over opening up the southern border, and still infuriated with the trade agreements and a whole bunch of other things. But on this, you got to give him credit where he played the card right.
Yeah, I it's an interesting thing to watch. And if it wasn't such a high stakes, dangerous game that's going to affect, you know, kitchen tables of people who just can't take another hit. I mean, it really is an exercise in elite chess, if you will.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, the longer this goes and the longer the world watches our children in Washington fight and bicker and scream and kick their feet and plug their ears, the worse it's going to be down the road as they're going to walk away from us. They're going to, you're already seeing countries looking at how to get away from the dollar as the reserve currency, which I'm not against dumping the dollar as the reserve currency. I think it would actually help our trade imbalances. But you're seeing other countries trying to get away from us.
Yeah, no, exactly. Hey, time to switch to another topic.
All righty.
This one's interesting. I have some pretty good sources in the counterterrorism circles here in town. One career U.S. counterterrorism source says the half-brother of Afghan President Hamid Karzai, who was assassinated today by both a friend and bodyguard, will be a loss to intelligence officials, actually, in the fight against the Taliban and al-Qaeda. Now, this is really interesting because, as you know, Ahmad Wali Karzai, the half-brother of the president of Afghanistan, is a known drug dealer, or should I say trafficker, in heroin, opium, the poppy trade, if you will. But he was also on the CIA payroll as an informant. And my source says, in his words, he was a necessary evil. While many will be glad to see him gone, security in Kandahar, where he lived and where he was the kingpin, may take a nosedive. It's a very interesting kind of example of what we have to deal with in that part of the world.
Yep.
By your standards and my standards, this is a bad guy.
Yeah. Well, look at Saddam Hussein. He was a bad guy. We backed him for years. Look at Curveball, another one. Not the greatest character, but we still picked him.
Yeah, it's very interesting. These things oftentimes come back to bite you.
Yep.
I was really fascinated by what I learned today in terms of this guy's importance, you know. And, it's the Yemeni leader is the next best example, Saleh. He lets us fly those drones over his country. But now, because the president has embraced the Arab Spring, he's obviously saying, your time has come. You know, you should just stay in Saudi Arabia. It's an interesting world we're living in.
Oh, like they say, interesting times.
Yeah, for sure. And on a personal note, if I may, when I complain about the rain, it's because I'm on my bicycle, not in my car.
All right. Because we need rain. It hasn't rained here in a couple of days.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. But I thought that was quite funny when I noticed you posting on my Facebook page, taking a little slap at me there. And I had to make it very clear to you, I am a cyclist.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Ken Bizinet, Talk Radio News Service. I appreciate the time, brother.
The pleasure is always mine.
Keep wheeling.
I will.
Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. There's an Associated Press article about Governor Tom Corbett and his position on liquor store sales.
So we're going to be going the privatization route.
Yes, we are.
Oh, joy, can't wait. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Mick on line one. How you doing tonight, Mick?
Good, Rick. How are you? You're great. Good show as always there. You keep me thinking there. I don't always agree with you. But before I get to my main point, what your last guest was talking about, I think the big question I have over there in Afghanistan is how do we get a guy like Helmut and Sodom and Ahmed, and then you got Wally?
Well, how did we get them? Well, our CIA funded them.
No, I just mean you got a guy. I don't know. Where's a name like Wally come from out of that area? That just struck me as unusual. The other thing I called for, Rick, I'm going to take you to task here. Like you were talking about the river on fire there in Cleveland and the Clean Water Act, clean it up, which I don't doubt. But was it because of the EPA passed the laws, or is it because the EPA helped put a lot of the industry out of business up there, too? I mean, is there else left up in Cleveland?
Well, no, it had nothing to do with the EPA didn't put the industry out of business. Our trade policies did. You can say what you want. As a nation, do we have the ability to dictate what happens within our borders? Do we have the ability to dictate who does business here? I think we do. And, having grown up in Cleveland and having seen that lake transform from something that was dead, there was nothing living in that lake. The only fish you saw were floating on its side. To now where you have a vibrant ecosystem there. And look, what happened to our steel mills? It had nothing to do with the EPA. It had the fact, first and foremost, the industry did not reinvest in its own business. And secondly, we had trade policies that encouraged dumping into this country. And third, if you really want to get into the whole currency discussion, we had presidents like Reagan and H.W. Bush who pursued a high dollar policy, which made imports into this country considerably cheaper and much harder for American companies to compete. So if you're going to take me to task over it, let's talk about trade from the perspective of our insane policies and our insane currency problems. First and foremost, I would like to see the dollar dumped as the reserve currency because it encourages trade deficits. But, you know, that's a discussion for a whole nother day.
Yeah, well, I realized there was plenty of things that went into that. I ain't blaming one thing, but I could send you an article just recently. I'm from over the other end of the state, Pittsburgh, and there's a power plant that can't meet EPA. It said it right in the article. The EPA is basically shutting them down. It can't pass their tests, so you're going to lose all these good jobs over there at one of the power plants in Ohio, good union jobs going out there. I mean, and that's not trade or anything else. I mean, that's just one thing right there. I don't really think you can argue something like that.
Well, I can't, Mick, but let me ask you this. You know, if it can't meet the air quality standards, at what point is our health worth, you know, worth anything? Why don't we have regulations that help these companies? You know, why didn't we help them put scrubbers on? Why didn't we help them move, to something that was cleaner burning? To me, at some point you have to, you know, to do the risk assessment. If I'm going to die of cancer, is having a job worth it?
I think there's a fine balance here somewhere. I'm not sure how much, whose numbers I believe anymore on what's dangerous, what isn't, I guess.
Well, I got to be honest. You know, I met a guy who took a job working for an HVAC company. He didn't realize that chlorine was as dangerous as it was, which is what they spray all over the stuff. He now has lung problems that he's never going to work another day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't know what he didn't know was going to kill him. And that's my problem on a number of levels, Mick.
Yeah, that's my problem with a lot of industry. Yeah, they pick on one, it seems like, where there's any job you work at, you could find something that's probably going to kill you.
Yeah, and to me, you know, there can be too much regulation, but I'm the type of person who will err on the side of caution. Let's investigate first, and then go forward. Like with the fracking going on in this state, we don't know what it's going to do. We don't know how it's going to affect our waterways. We don't know, but we're saying go ahead, go gangbusters. Because we need some jobs. And it's turning out that we're not getting the jobs. People from out of state are getting them. So there's a lot to that. So I'm not somebody who's going to bash the EPA. I think it's in its inception is a good thing. But can it be overarching? Sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's my problem. I mean, I want clean water as much as the next guy. But I think some of these agencies need to be elected so they have to answer to people rather than just be appointed. I think it'd be a better way of that they need to answer to somebody that might make it a little more.
Well, I think they are. I think they do answer to people. Here's my problem. If you're electing people, you're now turning into a popularity contest instead of who's the most qualified. I want experts. I want people who know, who have spent their lives doing this kind of stuff. You know, like the guys we know who do some regulatory work for the nuclear agency. Smart, intelligent, well-educated folks who know this industry front, forward, and backwards. Those are the folks I want the state employing. I don't want a political guy who just ran a good campaign.
Good point.
Appreciate the call, Mick. Great hearing from you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Save the USA, drowning in drafts of lies. Save the USA, and resume the size of mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download it there on our website. We do put all our podcasts up for your entertainment, enjoyment, and, of course, your convenience. And we'd love to hear what you think. You can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally and enjoy the banter. So what do you got going on tonight, Jake?
Yeah, I want to cover this one issue, Rick. Apparently the governor has come out and said he will sign a privatization bill when you're talking about the state liquor stores, but he's not going to tell the legislature how they should write down the particulars. Corbett isn't endorsing a forthcoming proposal from the state House Republican floor leader to privatize liquor sales in Pennsylvania, and he isn't saying how he would pursue the privatization of the state-owned system either. Asked Tuesday whether he supports the forthcoming proposal, Corbett said that he hasn't seen it. He added that his staff has seen it, and he believes the state shouldn't control liquor sales. But he says that how the system is privatized, how much revenue it raises for the state is something has to be worked on. And this is an important statement, and it reveals, I think, what the Republicans are up to. House Majority Leader Mike Terzai of Allegheny County expects to review details of the proposal Wednesday. A spokesman says it would auction hundreds, if not more than 1,000, retail liquor licenses. The reasons that's important, those numbers, that more than 1,000, are considerably more than the numbers that Terzai used several months ago. It seems to me that the Republicans are willing to have a liquor store in every corner in order to get the privatization bill passed, and what that would do, obviously, would bring more money into the state, but it would also, at the same time, considerably increase the chances of drunken driving. It would considerably increase the chances of underage drinking. It would considerably increase the problems associated with alcohol. So it would be interesting to see how high a number of the Republicans are willing to go, and therein lies the real danger to Pennsylvania citizens.
We need liquor stores on every corner. We need liquor within arm's reach of everywhere where you are. They should be right next to the Tic Tacs on every aisle. They should be right there next to the dirt, next to the rag magazines and in the supermarket checkout lines. We want liquor everywhere.
Well,
I mean, it's insane. And this whole discussion is just nuts. And what you've got is you've got a wimpy governor who goes, "Well, if it comes to my desk, I'll sign it, but I'm not gonna be involved in it."
Here's the problem that Terzai has. He originally came on gangbusters and said, you know, he was talking to the Republicans and the Democrats at that time, and he said, hey, look, this is an opportunity. We can get more than $2 billion. Well, he started looking at the numbers. If I remember, Rick, I think the original proposal was about 500 and 560 and of licenses and another 100 licenses for individuals who want to buy the businesses. Well, he started looking at those numbers and realized not only couldn't he get anything close to $2 billion, he wasn't even going to get $1 billion. So I think what he's trying to do is sweeten the pot here and say, hey, look, by the number of licenses that I want to give out, the difference between privatizing and the difference between allowing companies to buy these licenses, the difference of money coming to the state won't be that great.
And you know what this shows? It really shows that he doesn't understand the quote-unquote free market that he prescribes. He doesn't understand the supply and demand mechanism. If you increase the supply of these licenses, you decrease the value of those licenses.
Absolutely.
So even if you could get $1 billion for 560, I think is the number you used. I think it was a bit higher than that. But even if you could get $1 billion for the 560, you're not going to get much more than $1 billion for 1,000. Because the 560, the value of those are going to go down. Basic supply and demand. And what's going to happen is in smaller areas, you're going to be completely underserved. And, you know, right now the system is set up, you know, where adults know where to go get whatever liquor they want, or adults know when to plan into the future. They do it in a very smart, intelligent way. To me, once we start putting liquor stores on every corner, we are encouraging a whole host, yep, of very expensive problems that we, the taxpayers, are then going to have to pay for. So not only are we not reaping the profits from the industry, we are now taking on the risk of all the negatives. And to me, this is a bad idea. I don't see people marching in the streets saying, we want more liquor! I just don't see it. I don't see that this is a demand issue. I see this as an ideological movement, that this is something that the radical right has been had their little drawers wet over for years. And it's just not good for society.
They're counterattacking. I heard them on the airwaves today. Certain organizations like the Ticky Tank are saying, well, this is a matter of freedom and free enterprise. The truth is, and by the way, those numbers, it was about 560, and it was another 100 licenses for suppliers. So it was about 660. You're right, 560 was a little low. But what they're forgetting and what they're ignoring, and I haven't heard a lot of it, well, I've heard some, but not enough from the Democratic side, is that in other states when they did this, they absolutely had problems with drunken driving and sales to underage drinkers. I mean, the societal problems related to this issue increase when you take off the controls. And you can say what you want, whether you like the present system or not. They were very good at selling to the people who were of age. There was only one, I believe we repeated on this show, there was only one recorded incident of an underage drinker being sold liquor in this state in the last 5 years. But if you privatize it, that is going to change, and it's going to change considerably.
So that's going to be one of the things we end up fighting in the fall. And you already know it. You know this is coming. You know the school voucher thing's coming. All things to extract money from we, the taxpayers, to fund they, the profiteers. We know this is coming. We know the no rights at work agenda is coming. The Metcalf, you know, the mad cow bills. We know the threshold bills are coming so we can go back to the good old days of patronage. You know all this stuff's coming. Question is, how do I stop it? How do we stop this? And it's about organizing. It's about calling those folks and saying, look, you like that cushy job you got? You like that job? Got that title? You screw this up, you can kiss your butt goodbye come November 2012. That's what has to happen. You have to take control. You have to go and tell them, look, we don't want these stores privatized. It's making a nice chunk of change for the state. That's money that I don't have to pay in taxes. And but best of all, you know what? We get every penny of tax dollar that the states do. And on time, without giving the 1% away that we give to big box retailers. It's a good deal for the state. I mean, really, we're shareholders. Every one of us in this state are shareholders in that enterprise. And it is providing a product and a service, and we're benefiting from it. I don't see any reason to screw it up. I don't see any reason to destroy all those jobs and put this on a shelf somewhere. Just not seeing it. You know, I grew up in Ohio where you could get 42 proof anything at the local 7-Eleven. And when I was 14, 15, we commandeered a bottle every now and again. And, you know, we made our mistakes. As a hypocritical parent, I don't know that I want my kids doing that.
Imagine that.
Don't know that I want it. Anyway, I want to thank our guests for being on the program this evening. State Representative Brandon Newman talking about the budget and how it's going to affect seniors. And, of course, Donald Cohen from the Cry Wolf Project, crywolfproject.org. And, of course, Zed Jelani from Think Progress. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the foot of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and endless ray. Democracy's coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg. Hello.